Haven't heard the full song in a while. Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar here with you for 4 hours?
Yeah, 4 hours, prime time, baby.
You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right, let's bring it. It's going to be a big show tonight.
Let's do this thing, Kaufman.
First of all, it's the 1 year anniversary of the show.
It is.
Which is very exciting. I can't believe that they've allowed us to stay on this long.
Let's see it. That is interesting.
And to many, many more, hopefully.
Yeah.
And it's been a very interesting week, needless to say.
And, lots going on.
Lots going on in the world. And frankly, we are going to have a little bit of a mesh here tonight, Mr. Farrar.
Okay.
Because we're going to be celebrating, but we also have to tackle one of the biggest sports stories of the year.
Okay.
Which is Penn State.
Yes, it is.
There's nothing bigger, pretty much, I think, in my time since I've entered sports journalism than Penn State. And we've got a few guests tonight we will discuss it with. We have a few that we will not discuss it with. It's going to be a very interesting show. Going to be all over the place tonight.
Yeah, we're going to have some fun, too.
We're a couple of minutes away from Bruce Arthur joining us on the program. Bruce, of course, is the national columnist for the National Post. Cool, you can throw two Nationals in there and still not be talking about a baseball team, huh? I think that's pretty solid.
Yeah.
If you haven't read his article from last Friday entitled Jerry Sandusky and His Enablers, I strongly recommend it. We will be talking about Penn State with both Bruce and Dave Zirin at 9 o'clock. We're going all over the place today. We've got Patrick Burke in about a half an hour's time. Talk a little You Can Play. We'll be speaking with Rob Delaney. Hope Hamel has the delay button ready to go.
The Delaney button.
The Delaney button, yes. Yeah. I would imagine that Rob Delaney is nowhere near as potentially insidious on the phone as he is on Twitter.
We don't know that for sure, though.
No. We'll find out.
So stay tuned. You may hear something interesting later on.
Now, a little sports sidebar on Rob Delaney, which is kind of interesting. He has sung the national anthem 4 times at Fenway Park and 4 times at Dodger Stadium.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know he could sing.
Oh, he has a whole history in musical theater. We'll tackle that tonight. There is a rumor that he will be debating Mitt Romney on the program this evening.
On this program?
Yes.
I wasn't aware that we got Romney.
Well, we're working on it.
Oh, okay.
We're working on Steph Hamel is working real tough.
He's on the phones right now.
He's on the phones right now. He is trying to get Mitt Romney for the show tonight. And if so, then Rob Delaney and Mitt Romney will have a hell of a debate. And I have a feeling at the end of it, chances are we'll know who the next vice presidential nominee is.
Oh, my goodness. We're getting so much done tonight.
This is going to be a big show, Jay. I kid you not. And I say we get the ball rolling right now.
Okay.
Our first guest of the evening, who announced on Twitter about an hour and a half ago that he shouldn't be first, but damn that. Bruce Arthur's first because we want him first.
Okay.
I don't care if he bumps Patrick Burke. I don't care if he bumps Rob Delaney. We get to speak to Bruce Arthur on the Kaufman Show tonight. And here he is. Hey, Bruce, how are you?
Yeah, screw those guys.
Absolutely. Who the hell are they?
Let's do a couple hours here. Everyone get comfortable.
Well, you don't have to speak as fast as you alluded to on Twitter. We have plenty of time to kill, and there's no need. No need for the Edward G. Robinson impersonations. How's it going, Bruce?
It's good. I'm working in a shed. I'm getting ready for the Olympics. I leave in 5 days. Unbelievable.
Oh, you have to be a little bit excited about that.
Yes and no. My kids have just remembered who I was after spending 2 months on the road for the NHL playoffs. So we had a real nice rhythm going, and now I'm going to hop over to London, where today the big story was that because they've added so many people to border control, that they are missing people who should be flagged for watch lists at the airport.
Oh, my goodness.
One former cop was basically said that the border controls are imploding, so I'm really looking forward to London.
Wow. I don't even know where to go with that. I'm assuming you were in Vancouver, right, Bruce?
I was, and Vancouver was home. I mean, Vancouver's where I'm from, and I never worried about Vancouver in terms of a kind of Olympic worry spot because, you know, it's Vancouver. This is before the latest riot, and everything security-wise seems pretty under control. I always thought London just has a statistically greater chance because they've had terrorist attacks on their own soil before. And as much as they're spending on security, there's a shortfall from the private company, which is going to pull soldiers and police officers out of their regular duties to make up for it. And, yeah, we'll see how London goes. I think there's a chance that something bad could happen. I'd prefer it didn't. But my wife has already wondered what my company life insurance is.
Wow, Bruce.
I know, I'm starting dark.
Yeah, CTV's coverage of the Olympics, by the way, starts. I know it's. I mean, I hadn't even thought about it from that point of view. I was thinking more as just the logistical nightmare that is the Olympics and throwing that into London, because I saw what a mess it was in Vancouver.
Well, and the thing with Vancouver is you could walk, right? There was so much that you could walk to. They'd put in a new subway line. It wasn't actually that difficult to get around downtown. Even to get to a lot of the venues, if you weren't going from Mountain to downtown or from Cyprus to downtown, you could do it. London venues, I was just talking about this with my editor in London, they're all over the place, and it's going to be a much more complicated situation. That and it's raining, so that's not going to help. And it's basically, it sounds like it might rain through the whole Olympics. In which case, we Canadians, and especially those from Vancouver, can really make fun of the English papers for calling Vancouver the worst Olympics ever for not having snow. So I am looking forward to that. It's going to be a mess, because these things always are at the beginning, unless you're Beijing. Beijing was my first Olympics, and man, the trains ran on time. Like we once were late because a bus broke down coming back from Simon Whitfield in the triathlon, and they drove about 100 miles an hour honking the whole way all the way back to the city because they were terrified we might be 5 minutes late. But that's what you can do in Beijing. You can't quite do that in London.
What are you most looking forward to at the Games? I mean, obviously Canada's expectations are fairly high this year.
Well, I mean, the expectations are high, and they want to get top 12. They were 15th last time in Beijing. I think 12 is going to be a kind of a tall order. One thing with this Games is we've got a lot of Olympians who are coming into kind of their last cycles, right? A lot of the names that we've really become familiar with who we're going to lose after these Games, Sam Whitfield, Clara Hughes, Alexandre Despatie, and Emily Haymans, possibly. You can go up and down the list, and there's a lot of people that this country has become familiar with, and this is going to be the end for them. I think this is going to be a hard Games for us, partly because the Brits have put a lot of money in this, and if you look at their medal counts, they've gone up and up and up over the last few Olympics. The other thing is this. If you look at traditional Olympic medal standings, Brazil has been 2 to 3 medals behind us for a long time now. And who's got the next Summer Olympics? Those guys. And if they put the money in that I expect, this may be a bit of a problem. I think that we're going to have people who we won't have heard of before who are going to get medals. That happens every Olympics. But this is going to be a tough Olympics for Canada. Summer Games always are, and we're going to have to be surprised in places in order to get anywhere near top 12.
We've got a couple of minutes left with Bruce Arthur, who's hopefully going to be safe and sound in London at the Olympics this year. Bruce, I want to shift gears and talk about the article that you wrote last week on Penn State, which, first of all, the article was fantastic, and it's important for this to be covered. It's unbelievable that this is now a daily ritual in the sports pages to open up and read about a scandal this heavy. But I think it's probably the most important sports story of the year, and I'm wondering what your thought is on whether the football program should be canceled or not.
Well, it's a hard one to say, because if you cancel the Penn State football program, you're crippling the institution financially, because it brings in so much money. It's the engine of everything that makes Penn State worth having. And the thing is, I mean, I in no way minimize what happened, because it was deplorable, but Penn State is not an unadulteratedly evil place. They do a lot of good things. They had a researcher, it was mentioned on Grantland by Michael Weinreb, that they had a researcher recently who may have come up with a cure for cancer, although we've heard that before. It is a university that has been productive in a lot of different ways. And if you take football away, it cripples it. But the conversation that's been missing to me, and they're only starting to come around to it now, is that when you talk about the lessons of what happened at Penn State, the lessons are, it's kind of, there's a lot of people are saying, you know what, it was 4 bad men. It wasn't Penn State as an institution. You're not talking about the reasons behind it. The reasons behind it is, in the United States, football, especially at the big institutions, has become such a huge thing that it's become too big to fail. Like, what you can say is, if any program was ever going to get the death penalty, the program which systematically covered up the sexual abuse of children would have to be the one, right?
You'd think.
But if you look into that free report, one of the things that Graham Spanier, the former president, did is there was an agent who bought a suit for a player.
Curtis Enos, I think it was.
Curtis Enos, before the Citrus Bowl in 1997. He was banned from campus. They said, we're not going to have this kind of man here. And then they let Jerry Sandusky stick around, even though there were suspicions and later more than suspicions. One of them could hurt them with the NCAA, and one of them they thought couldn't. And that, to me, is the difference, is that if you're not breaking NCAA rules, you can still break the most fundamental rules of responsibility in a civic society, and that's what happened, is that this should be a lesson about the power of institutions, about the importance of sports in the American educational landscape. Some really big questions which aren't being asked. Like if the UBC football program where I went to school, if it was canceled tomorrow, if they were given the death penalty from CIS, yeah, some people would be upset, but it wouldn't kill the institution.
Right.
In the United States, there's a lot of places that would.
Right. If this was a volleyball scandal at Penn State, it wouldn't affect the rest of the program. But because it's the behemoth, I mean, I saw it argued that all women's programs would be canceled. All scholarships would be eliminated. It would be the death of the school for at least a few years, and then good luck getting people to come back.
Well, and that's the thing, is that it isn't just the direct revenue. When I talked to people at Penn State who said that when you were looking to close the deal on a big fundraising campaign or a big donor, Joe Paterno was the guy who came into the room. That was how so much of their money was raised. And they're in the middle of a giant fundraising thing now where they're trying to get a certain, I don't remember what it is, $1.7 billion or something over a certain life cycle to improve the university. They don't have Joe Paterno to do that now. And they had the second most donations they've ever gotten last year, partly because the owner of the Buffalo Sabres, Terry Pegula, donated about $100 million for the new hockey program. But even without that, even without kind of the big donors, Penn State could still do this as long as football is still driving it, because the people there still believe in the football. But that would be very easy for people at Penn State to say it was the administration's fault, to a degree it was Joe's fault. There's a structural issue there in terms of the culture of football at Penn State and in a number of other universities. This could have happened a lot of different places. That is the issue in terms of what I think we should have learned, or what some people should have learned from the Penn State scandal. One, silence when it comes to abuse, whether you're a victim or otherwise, only encourages more abuse. And two, when certain things are so important that you'll cover up that for them, then maybe you need to reassess the importance of those things. It's the same thing with the Catholic Church, and I think it's the same thing with Penn State.
Thank you for keeping this story top of mind in Canadian newspapers as well, Bruce. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure, guys.
And please have a safe trip to London, and I look forward to your sarcastic tweets of the opening ceremonies. Please don't let me down.
Oh, no, I'm going to be really nice about it. Don't worry.
Follow him on Twitter, Bruce_Arthur. Thanks so much for your time, Bruce.
See you, bud.
There he goes, Bruce Arthur from the National Post.
It's interesting, that Catholic Church comparison.
Well, it's plain as day, isn't it?
Yeah, and it really is. It's a solid. I mean, they're not going to shut down the Catholic Church, right?
Right.
Obviously, even when they admit it, and you know, people are prosecuted and they're caught doing these kind of things. I mean, sometimes the program is bigger than the story itself. Although, you know, I know
it's so.
Yeah, there's such a fine line to walk when it comes to deals like this. I mean, if they catch the people that were responsible for it and kind of clean them out of the program and keep that program alive and get a new start, perhaps that would be the best way.
I'm much more in the mood to have a discussion about the all-powerful NCAA.
Yeah.
And what can be done about that.
Yeah.
You know, who gives a damn about college football playoffs? This is so big, Jay. This is so much money. This is so big. And you know what they say about money, right?
What do they say about money?
They say you're listening to The Kaufman Show.
It's money.
And we'll be back. Welcome back to The Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, Steph Hamel on the board. How are you, sir?
I'm great, thanks. How are you?
Good to see you again, man.
Yeah. I was here for the first show, and now it's the anniversary, the 1 year anniversary.
You see, I am not 100% sure if you were, because I got a tweet today from Sean Coleman saying that he was in for the first show.
No, it's
the fight
true.
Is on, eh?
Yeah. Arm wrestling. Who you got, Kaufman, on that one?
Oh, maybe it was the Kaufman show. Maybe he was the first to the Kaufman show, but you did a show before the Kaufman show.
It was called Balls the Baseball Show.
That's right, and I was the first to produce that one.
Anybody remember? Let's see if you remember. Do you remember the first guest we had on Balls the Baseball Show?
I have no idea.
This is a test to see if you're actually telling the truth
here. Wait,
was
it someone from ESPN, right?
It was not. It was not.
So it might have been Coleman. It might have been Coleman.
It was the manager of the Cleveland Indians, Manny Acta.
Ah. I'd like to know the answer to this. See, I was not there.
No, you were not. No, you were not. And in fact, I would like to say hello to the gentleman that was there a year ago, Mr. Max Harris, who we had in studio a couple of weeks ago. He is now in San Francisco, California, and will be running Major League Baseball soon. The sooner the better for Montrealers, really.
Sure.
And then, of course, there was Pat Dusso. And
mesmerized us with his vocabulary.
And then, well...
His range of...
He's quite
grammar.
The,
he is. He's quite astute.
He's very lingual.
He's very lingual.
He's a cunning linguist, yes. I would say.
Yeah.
We also had Maurice Raymond, Big Mo from the Brides.
Right.
Man, my co-host position is like the drummer in Spinal Tap.
It is. It is.
But you've been there since October.
Yeah, I've been there since October, so yeah.
You're holding the fort.
I'm holding the fort. Happy anniversary, Dave.
I haven't been able to say anything to piss you off enough to make you not come back.
Nothing phases me, bud. Nothing. I don't care. My job is to piss off people, not for you to piss me off.
Well, it depends. Your job here is to piss off people.
Right.
I mean, for example, let's go back to last week where we talked about soccer for a few minutes. Uh-oh. And suddenly all of the... would you say that a fair majority of the Italian-Canadian population called in to give Jay a piece of their mind?
Yeah, from the East End, yeah. And you know what? They had a right to. I could see I was kind of misunderstood a little bit of where I was going. I had nothing against the East End, and I have no problem traveling there.
No,
I was simply complaining about the facilities.
You're not even. Your issue was that there is a lack of establishments.
That's right.
Within walking distance of the Olympic Stadium.
People underestimate the cravings that... most have for alcohol when attending a sports venue.
The 99 bar on Hochelaga Street.
Yes.
Are you familiar with it?
Yeah, we talked about that.
Isn't that the one where Bill Lee went in his uniform?
Right.
Okay. The 99 bar on Hochelaga Street is the home of the Montreal Ultras, which is the group that adds ambiance and makes Saputo Stadium feel like you're in Europe.
Yes.
I was about to say somewhere legitimate, but that's not fair to
when
say.
When they're not setting off flares and burning things.
Well, that's all part of the deal, man.
Yeah.
But
actually, they're not allowed to do that, but they do anyway.
Before every game, they all meet at the 99 bar on Hochelaga, which, by the way, isn't paying me a penny for this.
No.
I read this today in a fantastic blog piece by Andrew Wenger, who is a member of the Montreal Impact. He was a former player at Duke University, and he's now, I believe, a rookie with the Impact.
He was drafted first overall, actually.
There you go. And real smart dude. Follow him on Twitter. I did today. Amanda Stein, who I will tip my non-existent cap to, alerted me to this blog. And the guy wrote this wonderfully passionate piece about Montreal and how he's immersing himself in the culture. And he delves into the student protests, which I thought was really, really interesting. And talks about Bill 101.
Really?
And, yeah. Like talks about how he's reading the history of Quebec. Like, this guy obviously gives a damn about playing here and about being
get
here.
Get his own radio show or...
Well, we're going to try and have him in next week.
Sure, that'd be nice.
I want to talk to somebody that cultured, that intelligent.
Yeah.
And, you know, you hear about players, hockey, football, baseball, whatever it is, that have come through this town and get to know Crescent Street really well. But not often do you have guys that really want to immerse themselves in the community the way
get to know the
here.
History of Crescent Street. That's a different kind of thing.
Which is a sordid history on its own.
It is.
But needless to say, a really interesting article. And he talks about his impressions of the Ultras. And he sat down with a couple of them and got their story. And they meet at this bar on Hochelaga, Jay, which is within walking distance.
Yeah.
And they all meet up there and then they all go to the stadium together. I think it's cool.
Yeah, well, they used to frequent our pub as well.
Jeez, am I becoming an Impact fan? What's going on here?
Well, you should be. Everybody should be an Impact fan. I enjoy it very, very much. I watch every single game, for those who think that I hate soccer. I don't.
I don't watch every game, but I went and had a great time.
Yeah, I'll go one of these days as soon as they build a couple of bars down there.
I'll tell you what, Jay. How about we pack a cooler and head down there?
I don't think we'll get in, but
we can hang out by the car with the cooler before the game.
We'll create a stash of some kind.
We could even create a term for it. I think that's why don't we call that tailgating?
Tailgating?
Yeah.
Is that? Okay.
I feel like
is there room?
This is a $1 million idea. Is there room?
Is there room
at Park Olympic?
We're gonna do it in the driveway of somebody's duplex across the street, or what are we gonna do?
No, we're gonna do it on the golf course.
On the there's a golf course. Yeah.
Of course, there's a golf course.
Okay.
Maybe in the Olympic Village. Those pyramid-y looking buildings that
they've got. We'll get one of those condos. We'll ask them to open it up.
We wouldn't complain about the Big O being so far away if we lived at the Olympic Village.
It's not far away. It's just in a bad part of town.
This is the Kaufman Show, where we accept calls from all parts of town, good and bad.
Yeah.
Even out of town. The out-of-town number is 1-866-896-2546. If you're in Montreal, 514-790-0990. Steph Hamel's got a sports update, and we'll be back.
And I heard voices calling all around me. The earth rose above me, my eyes filled with sky. We are alive. And our bodies lie alone in the dark. Our souls and spirits rise to carry the fire and light the spark. Two fat shoulders.
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar here with you on a beautiful Monday night. Hot enough for you?
That's okay.
I'm down with this weather.
I've got air conditioning. I don't care.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Doesn't bother me. Even when I turn my air conditioning off, I'm in a basement apartment, so it's cold all the time.
Well, what about hanging out outside, Jay?
I don't do that.
You don't just hang out at home.
I don't
right?
do that.
You're on vacation right now.
I am on vacation, but that big yellow orb in the sky scares me.
Do you want to share with Montreal your vacation plans?
My vacation plans?
Well, you've romanticized them so much.
I'm not going anywhere, if that's what you're asking.
I know.
I'm not leaving.
I know,
I'm just gonna
me. Not that I'm trying to get rid of you. I wouldn't mind you have gone on vacation from Tuesday to Sunday.
Vacation takes energy, and what I need right now is a little bit less energy I need to keep my energy inside.
Store it like a
to
squirrel.
Store my energy because that's what I do. My job entails a lot of socializing and moving around and always being on. And so right now I'm very content to sit home in my own filth.
Wonderful.
I'm very happy about that.
Thank you for cleaning up for us tonight.
Yeah.
We all appreciate it.
Filth.
I imagine that Mitch Gallo wouldn't be sitting in the studio right now if you smelled like pig pen.
He loves it. Loves it.
He just loves that he can strike you out.
Oh, do we really have to talk about that?
Well, we don't have to talk about
it. Not for long. I don't think I'm playing him again, though. So, but he promised me next time I'm up, he's going to throw me a fastball right down the middle, first pitch.
Just to break that fourth wall for
just one, though.
Mitch Gallo is in studio. He's doing some work, and I'm sure that Jay will say goodbye to him when he leaves again.
in the middle of a
no
rant.
No matter what we're in the middle of,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I got to see. He's my boy, you know? Anybody who could strike me out, I've got a lot of respect for.
We've got some callers. Let's take a couple in the meantime before we get to Patrick Burke at 645. 1-866-896-2546 if you're out of town. 514-790-0990. This is who I think it is. We've got John in Denver. Hello, John.
Happy birthday, guys.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
Congratulations on a very good year.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you to many, many more.
Indeed. I want to talk to you a bit more about your soccer experience, if you don't mind.
Sure.
I want to know what you thought of the ultras. And because there's a crackdown in certain venues in MLS against that kind of culture.
I thought without the ultras, John, there would not have been any atmosphere at the stadium. They made that place rocking. When I went to buy the tickets before the game started, they asked me how close I wanted to sit to the ultras, and I thought, well, I'll give it a shot. I'm telling you, under the stands where the beer tent was or the beer vendor, you could not even hear yourself think while ordering the beer. They stomp and chant the entire time. It's very impressive. And supposedly it all started because when the Impact were in the lesser league 10 years ago, the Toronto Lynx came to town. I don't even remember the Toronto Lynx.
The who?
Exactly.
I've heard this story.
And 60 fans overran the stadium. And the Impact fans thought, oh boy, we better do something about this so this doesn't happen again.
And honestly, that's a lot of how it starts in MLS, honestly.
John, I got to tell you, man, I thought of you the entire time I was there. You've been on my ass about getting into soccer since it was announced that the Impact were coming to MLS. And frankly, I kind of berated it for a long time. I really downplayed it and said, well, this is just the same thing. Now that I've seen it with my own eyes, I had a good time.
And honestly, I'm a member of one of the supporters groups down in Denver who's facing one of these crackdowns, but I won't get into that at this point. But honestly, what I do is bring people in and tell them, just enjoy the atmosphere, and that's how you hook them. Their love of soccer will come along with it. Now, before I get out of here, I promised you something special, didn't I?
You did.
Happy birthday. Mr. Smithers.
Oh, God.
That's all I was going to do. I was just going to quote.
John, thank you very much for the call. And,
have a good one, guys.
Nice to see you getting off on your own volition and not when we kick you off.
I'm so disappointed he didn't continue that song.
I'm good.
No, it's good. It's good, Johnny. Appreciate
it. Have a good one, guys.
Thanks, John. We appreciate it.
I think what he was getting at with the ultras is that, you know, in any group of people who
Hold
are...
Hold on. We made a point that whenever we get rid of John, we're going to mention that the Rocky Mountain High. Yes.
Sorry. Yeah. Continue. Sorry. Yeah. Of course, we have to mention that.
We'd be remiss.
In any group of people, especially when you get fans and they're getting a little bit rowdy and there's a little bit of, you know, booze present, so you're going to have your rogue individuals who are going to do some stupid things. And it happens. It does happen at soccer games. It seems to happen more at soccer games than anything else. Now, I'm not talking European style. In the MLS, they haven't had any major problems.
No, they haven't had to, like, ban fans from the stadiums yet.
No, but I have it on good authority that there are some of the fans, not necessarily just the ultras, but some of the other visiting team fans who come in here and like to go and sit on the other side of the stadium and kind of egg on the other fans a little bit and start a little bit of trouble, mess around with them. So it does happen. And, you know, you'll get your smoke bombs go off once in a while. But all in all, these guys are just having a good time. And they really bring up the ambiance of the stadium.
Have we heard of any brawls at Saputo Stadium yet?
I haven't heard of any. Not yet.
Because, you know, like, if that's happening, we want to be all over it.
I so want to be there. I'd love it.
Oh, I'm not saying be there. I just want to hear about it.
No, I'd want to be there, though.
You know, if the Columbus, the six fans of the Columbus crew that I saw last week.
Right.
I think that was them.
Yeah,
they wore black and yellow, and they were off in the back corner. It would have been interesting if they took on the ultras.
I think they knew better than that.
The fans, you mean?
Yeah, I think they know better not to go around and start. I mean, you know, you don't want to mess with any kind of Montreal fan and many Montreal team fan Habs fans.
Oh, stop pandering! You don't want to mess with any. You know, I had tickets for the Habs Flyers a couple of years ago in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine who was in school in Philly at the time called me and he was like, Dave, I strongly suggest you sell these tickets. You don't want to go there. You don't want to be treated like that. It's not worth it.
Yeah, but I'm a bigger guy.
Yeah, next time I'll bring you.
Yeah.
This is the Kaufman Show. We'll be back in a couple of minutes with Patrick Burke from You Can Play. coming in on a little Mountain Goats on the one-year anniversary special of the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar. Jay?
Our sexy music tonight?
Supposedly.
That's what I hear.
Nobody's told me that yet.
Yeah, well, Chantal on Twitter, she's at HabsGirlForLife, says, you guys have sexy music tonight, so we're dedicating all our songs tonight to you, Chantal.
My God, did you just throw on an FM radio voice?
Mm-hmm. Johnny Fever, baby.
That's funny. Somebody actually referred to me as a WKRP-er today.
A WKRP-er?
Well, yeah, let's go there with that. Exactly.
Sorry.
Let's take it down that road.
Sorry. That's what we were thinking. I mean,
can we go back to elevating the discourse for a second?
Yes, we can.
All right. So in that case, we should probably bring on our next guest, who seemed a little upset with me a little earlier for supposedly bumping him. But yeah, so let's see just how much trouble I'm in and remind him that the delay is on so he can do as he chooses right now. Welcome to the show, Patrick Burke from the You Can Play campaign. How are you, sir?
Good. How about yourself?
We're fantastic. We're fantastic. Yeah. We haven't had as crazy a week as you, but I guess there's been a little bit of time now to sit back and digest what happened last week. And can we chalk it up to a learning experience with Mr. Jansen?
I think so, and I hope so. I mean, as we said from the start, there's no excuse for the things he said. There's no explaining them away. There's no defending them. Everything he said was dumb and offensive. And, I've talked to him four or five times now. He's called me or texted me repeatedly to check in and, apologize. I had to tell him to stop apologizing to me because it was getting to be too much.
Wow.
And we're finding some ways to get him involved with the with You Can Play, and also there's some other groups out in the St. Louis area that he might be doing some work with. So I'm very convinced that that Cam feels terrible about what he did, and that there won't be a repeat event.
Is this the first time that you've had to dress down somebody publicly about this, or at least a professional hockey player?
Yeah, this is the first time since we've launched that we've had an NHL player do something like this. So it was a new experience for us.
Do you think it'll be the last?
No, I don't. I wish I could say I did, but no. Athletes have been trained and to use these words for decades now, and you're talking about guys who have been saying homophobic things since they were 10 years old, and I think it's going to take a while to break those habits, and unfortunately, I don't think this will be our last time with it.
I know your mandate is solely reserved for the hockey world, but, as a dude walking down the street, you must be like me. You walk into bars, you hear these words, you hear these things on a daily basis. How does it make you feel, and do you feel like butting in when you hear somebody say something derogatory?
Well, it depends. If someone directs it at somebody or situation like that, all my friends now, anyone who's close to me knows if they say anything even remotely homophobic around me, they're going to get a look from me, and that'll end the conversation pretty quickly. I don't feel the need. Anytime I hear a homophobic slur, do I feel the need to run over and correct somebody? No, just as I don't feel the need to correct every idiot that walks past me on the street for every stupid thing that they do. So it's disappointing every time you hear it, but and I'm proud of the progress that we're making so far, and I think we're on the right track.
Well, let's talk about that progress. For people who don't know, how has the You Can Play campaign grown in the last 6 months?
It's been great. It's we started our original launch day. We had 30 players that were involved. We're committed to be involved. We're now up to around 55. We've now had two OHL teams. We've had a high school here in the U.S. We've had several universities, both in Canada and the U.S. We're at the point now where, as I said before, NHL players call me to try and get involved. It went from us emailing players and saying, hey, do you mind doing this? We only need a few minutes of your time, to now athletes calling me and saying, hey, I really want to do something. I want to get involved.
When are we going to see You Can Play move into other sports?
I have meetings with the other major sports leagues coming up in the next couple weeks. So hopefully that they think there's a fit there, and we can start moving in with the other leagues officially. If not, our plan will be to recruit individual teams and athletes to represent their sport individually.
Well, there's a pretty big NFLer that you can start with. I don't know if you saw the news today, but Rob Gronkowski was quoted as saying that he'd be more than okay with a gay teammate.
I saw that, and one of our advisory board members is the director of new business development for the New England Patriots. So we're hoping there may be a fit there.
Awesome. Patrick, tell us a little bit about the clothing campaign, which seemed to be a fire on Twitter this weekend.
We've got a couple things going. Right now we launched two basic T-shirts. The link is on our Twitter page, at You Can Play Team. Those two will be up for 10 days. They're limited editions that will only be printed the number that's requested, all the profits to us. Our full store, which will feature a couple different varieties of T-shirt, so I've been told, a couple different varieties of T-shirt. Stickers, both bumper sticker size and more of a helmet sticker size, so you can put them on your hockey helmet if you want. And bag tags for luggage and hockey bags and gym bags. That'll go live August 1st. And then as we get into September, unfortunately I can't talk about it yet, we have two deals in place with some pretty cool clothing companies that are going to be doing some really interesting stuff for us.
Awesome. We'll have to have you back on in the fall to discuss it.
For sure.
And in the meantime, I want to thank you, really, just for all that you've done for the show in the last since you started this campaign. It's been an honor to speak with you on a semi-regular basis, and we appreciate you being a part of the show today.
Always happy to be on. Congrats on the one-year anniversary, and thanks for thinking me worthy of being on the anniversary show.
Absolutely. Again, if it wasn't for Bruce Arthur, you would have been the leadoff.
I'm going to have a little talk with Bruce, who thinks he can bump me here. I don't know who he thinks he is.
Patrick Burke from You Can Play. Follow him on Twitter at one of the least original hockey nicknames of all time, Berkey YCP. Thank you, Patrick.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Have a good one. There he goes, Patrick Burke from You Can Play. And again, I know that Mitch had him on last Friday because of the circumstances with the Cam Jansen story, but we've been planning this for a while. We stand up and believe in what the Burks are doing and what the Burks have done.
Yeah.
And, you know, if it was my brother or your brother, we would do the same thing.
Yeah. Well, I'd do the same thing even if I don't, even if it isn't. And let's, you know, let's hope there aren't too many more Cam Jansens out there coming out of the wood. And you know what?
Jay,
I know there is.
Tons, man.
I know there is. And it was a question I wanted to ask, but I didn't really want to ruin the vibe. It's how many are there?
This is the Kaufman Show, and we'll be back. Once again, the You Can Play campaign. They do wonderful work. If you can play, then you can play. Something that we could all and should all get behind.
Yeah, and it's just so interesting what's going to develop in the coming years as player eventually will come out. It's inevitable. It's going to happen. And
but the culture needs to be accepting. So as long as there's Cam Jansons out there saying what they said last week on radio in St. Louis, it's not going to happen.
Well, this is what's going to happen is they will come out. I mean, it's easy to say to a poll that, oh, I'd have no problem playing with a gay teammate. It's easy to say that, and it's the right thing to say socially.
Sure.
But when it actually happens, I can see a lot of guys coming out of the woodwork, and then the real feelings and the real politics of it start to come out, and it's scary, but it's going to happen, and it's good because I'd like to know who these guys are. You know, there's when someone comes out, the others come out as well.
It's important
on the other
know,
side of it. It reciprocates.
It's important to know who not to cheer for.
Exactly. It is.
I know.
It is. And it's going to happen. There are people can't control themselves. There's going to be a time where once somebody comes out and this guy sees his gay teammate, he's going to be so uncomfortable that you know something stupid's going to come out of his mouth, even though he said to the poll that he'd be very accepting of it. It's easy to say that.
1947 all over again.
Exactly. And we'll also see some heroes come out of the woodwork as
well. You'll see a Pee Wee Reese put his arm around.
That's right.
You'll see it.
Good reference, Dave.
This is the Kaufman Show. We'll be back. With a wide open country in our hearts and these romantic dreams in our heads. As we made a promise, we swore we'd always remember. No retreat, baby. Blood brothers on a summer's night with a vow to defend. No retreat, baby, no surrender. No retreat, baby, no surrender. Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. That was a little fun, eh?
Yeah. Does this count as sexy music?
Rip This Joint by the Stones?
Yeah.
My definition, absolutely.
Anything by the Stones is sexy.
Pretty much.
Doesn't matter what it is.
I can think of very few exceptions to that rule. Very few. We can name them later.
Okay.
In the meantime, first surprise guest of the evening. Surprise, everybody. We've got ourselves somebody really cool on right now. I saw this man perform last summer at the Nasty Show where he absolutely destroyed it. And then I saw him about a week later at Mark Maron's WTF podcast, where he was one of the guests. Mike Ward is a Montrealer. He's a comedian, and he's a comedian in both languages. He can do it in French. He can do it in English. Supposedly, he was on the shortlist for head coach of the Montreal Canadiens, because, you know, that's what you need to do.
Oh, boy.
And he's with us now. He's got a couple of shows. He's got a show in French. He's got a show in English. The show in English, I'm going to let him say the name of. And salut, Mike. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me.
How are you, man?
I'm doing real good.
You all ready to entertain Montrealers of both languages over the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, I'm real ready. I have a gala tomorrow night, actually Wednesday is my French gala, and then the French shows are done, and then I'm starting, my show in English is called Pedophile Jokes and Death Threats.
Right, and that is, and funnily enough, you've received quite a few death threats since you started it, haven't you?
Yeah, I actually don't have that many pedophile jokes, but I have a lot of death threats.
Why would you pick such a boring title for your show?
I wanted to make sure that whenever you do a show that's kind of offensive, you always have people come in and then they bitch after and complain, and that was too offensive. But I figured if there was the name Pedophile Jokes in the title, no one can complain after.
You kind of know what you're getting into.
You can't pay money and then for a show called Pedophile Jokes and go, that was offensive. I thought you went too far. So
in a day and age where we just saw it with Daniel Tosh getting criticized for a very, very poor attempt at humor last week, how do you straddle that line? How do you make jokes about things that are so taboo?
You hope for the best. Like the joke he did, actually, like the difference between a good joke and a bad joke isn't that big. And oftentimes if you're trying out new material, you'll just bomb and you'll suck at whatever you're trying to do. And the problem with like Twitter and Facebook now is that if you screw up one night, everyone knows about it.
Mm-hmm.
So you just hope, like what I do is I write and I try to make myself laugh, and if I can make myself laugh, I hope other people will laugh. And generally they do, and when they don't, you just hope no one shoots in the head.
It's a matter of context, isn't it, Mike? I mean, words are words, and if you're not hurting anybody with them, I mean, you could use them. Words, Carlin always said that words are so harmless. It's when you censor them is that you give them more power. So you have to be careful with the context in which you're using them.
Exactly. Like in a club, like in my show, I have a couple of pedophile jokes. They're funny. But the same jokes, if you were telling them to a little kid that had just got raped by a priest, and it's really not funny anymore. So it's always in the context. And what I do is, it's kind of offensive, but everything I write is, I don't mean it in a mean way. Like, my goal in life isn't to hurt people. And when people are offended, like, that's not my objective.
You'd be in a really weird line of work if it was your goal, wouldn't you?
Yeah, but a lot of people, for some reason, like, they think that, let's say if they're offended by a joke, they think the comic actually wrote that joke trying to hurt them or trying to, I don't know. People are weird.
Well, people have, everybody's, you know, has their own thing. The one thing like that, and I was actually having this conversation with a friend this week. I asked them if they were going to the Nasty Show this year, and they were like, really, do you think I would go to that kind of a show? And frankly, I mean, I'm pretty PC, but I know that when you go to something like the Nasty Show, you got to leave everything at the door. They're going to make fun of everyone and everything. And that's, you know, that I think that's how you get away with it, is by, you know, no stone left unturned.
Yeah, you have to, like, if you're offensive, you have to be, or if you do edgy stuff, you have to talk about everything and treat everyone and everything in the same way. And that's what I try to do. And that, the Nasty Show, they're perfect at that. Like, that show, when you go, you have to know, okay, I can't take anything personal, and I can't get insulted by this.
We're in conversation with comedian Mike Ward. He has his French gala tomorrow night, and then his English shows start Wednesday, July 18th at 9:30 p.m.
July 20th at 7:30.
Well, then you should tell them to fix the website. Oh, there we go. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just not reading properly. What can I say? Well, we can blame me. Everybody's great at Just for Laughs. We love you all. Let's make that very, very clear. Mike, tell me about trying to entertain a French audience versus an English audience. How do the jokes differ?
I think French crowds are easier to offend because, like, their stand-up in French is kind of new. Like, the first real stand-up comics were, like, in the late 80s, early 90s, whereas in English, you know, like, Lenny Bruce was in the 50s. So they're easier to offend, but French crowds are really generous, too. Like, a standing ovation in French isn't rare. Like, any half-decent comic gets a standing O.
Well, is this sort of a follow-up on the clapping when the plane lands?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's just that French people like to clap. That's basically, yeah.
I guess the days of André Philippe Gagnon are over. And, yeah.
No,
good.
Like, the comedy is, like, there are a lot of really good French comics. And
yes,
when I
first
started doing shows in English, wherever I'd go, like travel in Canada, people would always see me, oh, okay, a French-Canadian guy, this guy's going to, either he's going to juggle or he's going to make saxophone noises. Or, but there's actually some really solid French comics.
Such as?
French-Canadian comics.
Oh, okay.
French comics are garbage.
But as far as, as far as French-Canadian comics performing in English, I think that's pretty much your game, right?
Yeah, well, there's a couple. There's a... they're actually doing a show at the Fest this summer called Franglais or Franglo, and which is all French comics doing stuff in English. And there's a show, I think it's Blokes versus Frogs, where it's a French guy is doing it in English and then English guy is doing it in French.
We're just closing up with comedian Mike Ward, who's appearing at the Just for Laughs Festival and the Juste pour Rire Festival this summer. Mike, are you a Habs fan?
Yeah. I'm a Nordique fan, but since they don't exist anymore, I'm rooting for the Habs until Quebec gets a team again.
See, that's got to be weird, and I know that a lot of people from beautiful, beautiful Quebec City have done the same thing. They've latched on to the Canadiens. I can't imagine cheering for a team that I grew up hating.
Well, it took me a while. What's weird is I still hate what's his name, Marcel Aubut. I did that sold the Nordiques to Colorado. I was at the Olympics a couple of years ago doing a show.
Yeah, and he's the head of the Olympic Committee, right?
Yeah, and I didn't want to meet him. They were like, the president of the Olympic Committee wants to meet you, and I was like, I don't want to meet him. I was like, really? I'm still angry. It's been like 20 years, and I'm still angry.
As an Expos fan, I hear you loud and clear, Mike.
We could go hate together.
Yes, we can. I think that's something that, I think if the English and French just realized how much they had in common as far as hate, I think that would help us a lot in this process.
We could all hold hands and hate.
Sing kumbaya together angrily. Yeah. Mike Ward is appearing at the Just for Laughs Festival. Check out all the information at hahaha.com. Merci.
All right, thanks, guys.
Really appreciate it. Have a great night.
Cool, you too. See ya.
There he goes. Monsieur Mike Ward, merci beaucoup.
Gonna go piss some people off.
Would say so.
With words. People are so offended these days by everything. So righteous.
You know, but it's interesting because on one hand, we talk about that with Mike, and on the other hand, we talk about it with Patrick and talk about somebody saying something which is offensive. It's this.
It's all in. It's the context. It's always the context. If you're saying something to deliberately hurt somebody, or you're saying something out of ignorance, well, it's a different story. But when you know what you're talking about, and you kind of come across as semi-apologetic
right.
in your stand-up comedy act, people will understand it if they have half a brain anyway.
Looking forward to Rob Delaney in about 15 minutes time.
Speaking of which.
In the meantime, 514-790-0990, 1-866-896-2546. This is Gord Downie and Buck 65. I don't know if it's me who's moving through you or you through me. The sea. I yelled, I'm taking on water, and you just kept on battering. Feed me your agonies, your riches, and voices. Trespass against me and offer me choices stronger than. Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. I quite enjoyed bringing Gabriel Nadeau-Dubois onto the program on that show, on that song, No Champagne Socialist. Nobody commented on it, but you know, it's the little things that get me happy.
You're easy to please.
I'm very easy to please. What can you say? Speaking of, well, I don't know if it's speaking of being easy or being pleased or something, but we were having an interesting conversation at the break just now. You know, we all swear a lot, like a lot, and it's a miracle that we don't do it on air.
Well, I've had a few moments where I had to.
You can muzzle yourself all you want. The point is, in the real world, when there isn't a microphone in my face, I feel like I have a tendency to swear. And I'm not really holding back. I'm not thinking about it. But it's amazing how sitting in this studio and knowing that you really can't. I mean, you can hit the Rob Delaney button if you want. Which I'm really hoping we don't have to use on Rob Delaney, by the way.
I'm kind of hoping we will, just for entertainment value for myself.
Well, if we do, just know that the unedited versions of The Kaufman Show are available at thekaufmanshow.podbean.com as well as on iTunes. Their rules with the CRTC are a little different than the ones over commercial radio.
Yeah, and a lot of people, a lot of these guys, these home DJs are home MCs or whatever they are at their house, and they're doing their little podcast, and they see it as a venue.
Don't
where,
say it like that. Mark Maron does WTF from his basement. 20 million people have seen it.
I'm talking about, well, let me finish, will you?
Okay, well, you called it a little podcast.
I'm talking about the guys who do it for the sake that they could just swear and say something stupid.
Oh, okay.
Okay, and that's easy to do. To drop an F-bomb every second word is the easiest thing you could do.
It is.
It's all about placement.
That's right.
Of these words. Use them when you have to. Just because you have a podcast and you know you're not regulated by the CRTC doesn't mean that you just have to swear and say the most disgusting things possible in order to get some attention.
Do you
say something profound and then drop an F-bomb at the end of it?
Evan Wright, do you swear on Twitter?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I do swear. I do swear on Twitter because I can. But, you know, not all the time. It's not every second word. I swear when it's...
Well, when you only have 140 characters, it seems like a waste of four, right?
Not necessarily. Again, it depends on which context. But, you know, where it's well-placed and it's humorous. I mean, I swear for humor value. I don't swear out of anger. I swear because it's funny on Twitter. But it's got to be well-placed and it's got to be significant. It's got to mean something. It's just, it's easy to drop an F-bomb every 2 seconds.
Speaking of the, I'd say the biggest swear word in the history of the Kaufman Show, that would be the incomparable, the legendary, the godfather of Canadian rock and roll. You can follow him on Twitter at hockey-esque, Mr. Dave Vedini. Go check out the archive.
Yeah.
He had some very interesting things to say.
And it was in context. A lot of people would have been offended by that.
100%. And I'll never forget Mo Khan calling in going, did he just say that?
we missed the dump button on that one.
Yeah, because all of our jaws are on the floor. It had never happened before.
No.
So, yeah, we're about to be joined by Rob Delaney. We're nowhere near. We're on till 10 o'clock tonight. For are you feeling all right?
I'm feeling great.
All right.
Only 10?
I know. Well, maybe Hamel will want to stick around a little longer.
Yeah, he really wants to do that.
Yeah, maybe we
can't.
It's
wait.
So clear.
Can't wait.
We can go to 11 to keep all the people company that left Montreal at 6 o'clock to drive to Toronto and stayed tuned to the app.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
5 hours of the Kaufman Show. Shoot me now.
Well, we have a lot. We have a lot of material. There's a lot of things we can cover. So.
We do a lot of interesting guests. I definitely want to get on this this high rise of the future that's being built adjacent to the Bell Center. They're taking my brick away.
Well, that hasn't been confirmed yet. They might be moving it to the other side of the Bell Center.
Yeah, they're going to do something with it, but they took my brick away.
Okay, does that mean you own a part of that condo or?
No, God, no.
Because the Expos took my brick away.
Did you ever get it back?
They didn't make one. We got the money back, though.
Oh, I thought those bricks were made. I thought everybody had already gotten a copy of it.
I don't think so. Cause the only thing I got back was the money. So.
Well, that sucks.
Yeah, it does suck. I still have it. I still have.
The money.
The application, the money, the letter returning it and everything. I have it at home. I'll bring it in one day.
Please
and
do.
Read it.
We'll have a little Kaufman show and tell.
Yeah, and just stuff. Oh, man. Steph, hit the dumb button on that one.
I wish I had my playoff tickets from 94.
From 94?
Yeah.
You know what? I got some, too. My dad had season tickets. I wonder what happened to those.
I was.
They sold them, didn't they?
Oh yeah.
Oh wow.
Oh man, I was. I remember going.
Why do we have to talk about this right now?
Because it happens.
All right.
It's an organic thing that just comes up. We host a sports talk radio show on a sports talk radio station. And occasionally we talk about things that have gone away, that we miss.
You can get me all riled up again.
Like the Expos.
Yeah.
You want me to rile you up again?
No.
Right now. Man, the Olympic Stadium's so close.
It is close. It's fine.
Wait, the Olympic Stadium's so beautiful.
No, it's horrible. It's don't rile me up. I'm easy to bait.
I miss going to baseball games at the Olympic Stadium. Can you get on board with that one?
No. I hated that
place.
I hated that place. It's not a place to watch baseball. I went 40 times a year, but I hate that place.
What's it a place for, Mr. Farrar?
What's it a place for?
What is the Olympic Stadium a place for?
It's probably for it's for Godzilla to take a dump in. That's what it's for. It's a large toilet bowl.
Yep.
With no redeeming qualities whatsoever.
Yep, that's I am speechless. I am speechless. I thought you could do better than that. The way that we stalled on that one, I thought you could.
Well, what do you want me to say?
I don't know.
Nobody else knows what it's good for either. They don't want to play football. They don't want to play soccer in there.
I think it's good for motocross rallies.
Oh, isn't that great?
I think it's a good spot to go to.
Monster truck rallies?
You know, if you want to hang out on pavement, I think it's a good spot to hang out. If you like the smell of 30-year-old cigarette smoke,
yeah,
it's a great place to hang out. I have nothing but good memories of that place. I literally walked around there before the Impact game a couple of weeks ago and was trying to figure out where the beam fell. Remember when there was the road trip and was it 91?
Yeah.
And the Expos were out of town and then they had to finish the rest of the season on the road. I was trying to figure out where that beam fell from.
I remember seeing it.
It was outside, wasn't it?
Yes, I remember seeing it walking right by it. But I don't remember what side of the stadium it was.
I don't hate the Olympic Stadium. I quite enjoyed a full Olympic Stadium, and frankly, selfishly, I quite enjoyed an empty one as well. I thought it was really cool to have that place to myself, and all of you that didn't go don't know what you were missing.
I enjoyed the quality on the field.
Sure.
I didn't enjoy the stadium. I hated it. I hated it. I hated the smell of it. I hated the humidity inside. It was It was warm very often, especially in the summer months, like deep into the summer, the dog days of summer. And when it was empty, it was terrible. I know, you're talking from memories and you look back on it and you're emotional. You know, you a song always sounds better when it happened at a time of your life that was a very happy time. And I believe the Olympic Stadium is the same way for a lot of people. But when I look back on it right now, I realize I hated that place.
I was thinking a lot about the Olympic Stadium last week because it was on July the 12th, it was the 50th anniversary of the first ever Rolling Stones concert. And my first ever concert was the Stones at the Big O in 89. I was just turned 9 years old. My mom took me to see the Stones at the Big O. Like you said, nostalgia, memories.
Right.
I've got some good feelings from that place. It taught me about rock and roll. It taught me about baseball.
But it
That's
didn't.
Pretty much me.
The Expos taught you about baseball. The Rolling Stones taught you about rock and roll. Not the Olympic Stadium.
Yeah, but it was there, man. It was there. That's where I experienced so many things that are so important to me that will stay with me forever. And who cares that it was a dump? It was my dump.
Well, now it's Godzilla's dump.
And Steph Hamel, that is a sound cue. This is The Kaufman Show. We'll be back with Rob Delaney. This is going to be fun.
Hard times go, and hard times come, and hard times go, and hard times come, and hard times go. Just to come again, but on your again, but on your again, come on and take your best shot, and you see what you got, but on your again. You be a bright light coming out of the dark. All the doctors blinking hard.
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar here with you till 10 o'clock tonight. Rob Delaney around the corner. Cabby from TSN.
Yeah. Cabby, what a lineup, Richards. Dave.
I know. It's a good one.
Yeah. Good for you.
We've got Ben Christensen in the 8 o'clock hour as well.
He's been making the moves.
Ben mentioned today that he's been on the show a dozen times.
Really?
Yeah. So I thought, hell, let's make it a baker's dozen.
Okay.
Ben will...
That's 13, that's by the right. way. 13.
That's correct.
Baker's dozen.
Correct.
Is just a long way of saying 13.
13.
13.
13. Ben is... well, we'll talk about it afterwards, but Ben is throwing out the first pitch at the Oakland Athletics-Texas Rangers game on the 18th, so in 2 days from now.
It's not Wednesday Barack night. Obama? It's not...
No, it's no. not Barack Obama.
No.
But it's funny that you mentioned Barack Obama.
Uh-oh.
Because we have two guests coming up right now. And I'm very excited for both of them. One is the Republican nominee for the presidency of the United States, Mitt Romney. And the other is Rob Delaney, who, I mean, the awards from Nobel Prizes to Nobel Prizes and I think a couple of AL MVP awards as well.
Okay. He's well decorated.
He is. Yeah. And I love the idea of getting two intelligent people to debate back and forth. And frankly, you see the way that Mr. Delaney has challenged Mr. Romney several times on Twitter. And it's a pleasure that we can finally get them both together and really sort this out. And I think by the end of it, we might be able to see who the next vice president of the United States is, because I think that maybe Mitt will figure it out. Anyways, let's get Mitt Romney up. Governor Romney, welcome to the program. Governor Romney. Oh, that son of a bitch. He did it again, Jay. All right. You know what? Let's just go with Rob Delaney and we'll be all right. Rob Delaney, welcome to the Kaufman Show.
What's going on?
We appreciate you joining us tonight. We're sorry. We thought that Mitt Romney was going to be with us, but it looks like he is retroactively retired once again.
Oh, it's too bad.
I know.
Well, hello anyway.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good, good. We cannot wait for you to get up to Montreal, Rob.
Neither can I. I'm very excited.
Have you, I know you're from not too far from here. You're from Boston. Have you spent much time in our fair town?
You know, I've never been before, so very excited to come.
Oh, good stuff. I got to say, you were missing out. You were you grew up a five-hour drive from here. You had your shot. You could have been that 18-year-old Massachusetts kid drinking before he was allowed.
I know, right? Yeah, as it was, I wasn't able to drink alcohol until I was 21.
Ah, what a shame.
And I never did, of course. I didn't pull my 21st birthday.
Of course.
Of course not.
Which explains the line of work that you're in right now. It's it's such a sober business. It's very good to see that.
Mm-hmm.
Rob, before we get into your comedy, which I'm a huge fan of, I love following you on Twitter. I'm not often able to retweet what you tweet out, but... Jay and I spend a lot of time in our commercial breaks going back and forth reading your tweets and seeing which person will crack first. But you turns out you have a bit of a sports pedigree, don't you?
Yeah, I know what you're referring to. Are you talking about the national anthem?
We are, yes.
Yeah, I have sang the national anthem for the Red Sox and for the Dodgers a few times each. And the reason for that is I used to, a long time ago, I used to do musical theater, and I did like national tours of Broadway shows and stuff, and I had a friend who worked for the Red Sox, so years ago she asked me to send them a CD of me doing the national anthem, and I did, and since there's 162 games a year, and they can't get Michael Bublé for each one, so sometimes they just have to have some schmuck sing it, and so I got to sing it, and I did, I guess, passably well, so they had me do it several times over the years, and then I got to do the Dodgers as well.
What was the difference for you? I mean, I'd imagine performing, touring Broadway shows, you're getting several thousand people at each show, but mm-hmm. What's it like being at Fenway in front of 35,000?
I almost blacked out, literally. I mean, I was so nervous that it was the closest thing I've ever had to an out-of-body experience. It was just, I mean, I had tunnel vision, and I don't know how I did it, but somehow I did, and it was, it was amazing. Only at the very, very end did I remind myself, like, hey, you should be enjoying this.
Is that something that you... Is that something that you experienced as well when you were doing musicals?
No, not at all. I was just like, blah, blah, kiss the girl, dance around. It was a much lower stake.
Rob, how have you managed to find this incredibly unique voice on Twitter?
Short answer, I don't know. The longer would be my thing on Twitter is I'm very grateful that anybody at all would want to follow me. So I try to honor that by being funny, or at least interesting with each tweet. You know, I'm not going to be like, oh God, it's raining out, because that's like saying screw you to the people who follow you, you know? I try to just be entertaining and elicit a response. If it's a laugh or a yuck or a wow, you know, I do think of it as analogous to stand-up or writing for TV. People have given you their time and attention, so you should respect it with a filthy joke.
And that you do. How much time do you spend a day on Twitter, Rob?
Too much.
Well, don't we all? But, I mean, come on.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm just as awful as somebody who's just reading. You know, like, I read as many as I write, or probably, of course, a lot more. I read, you know, other people's, and I pay attention to it. I'm personally disgusted by the amount of time. I'm trying to sort of dance around the question the way Mitt Romney might, so that I don't actually think about it too much. I don't want to face it. I should be out. I live by the beach in California. I should be at the beach, but instead I'm hunched in a dirty basement, squatted over cat litter in case I have to go to the bathroom.
Jay, it sounds like your place.
Lunch meat and tweeting.
Wow.
You want to be my roommate? It's perfect.
I think we have the perfect visual right now of how Rob Delaney crafts his oeuvre.
Yeah.
Rob is playing at... he's opening for Epic Mealtime at the Metropolis on the 27th at 7 o'clock. But if you really want to get a flavor for Rob, it's going to be at Cleopatra. You know you're playing a strip club, right?
I've been told that, yep.
It's a very interesting venue. Saw Ari Shaffir there last year. And have my tickets for your show right now on the 28th. He's playing Rob is playing the 25th, 26th, 27th, and 28th. All the shows are at 10:30, and you can get all of the tickets at hahaha.com. Obviously, you have longer form jokes for stand-up shows, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're not just going
to
be...
Yeah, there's no... My stand-up and my Twitter are very different. I mean, well, there are some thematic things that are the same, but mostly in live comedy, I'm more of a, you know, relatable human person rather than just weirdo joke robot on Twitter.
Well, as the weirdo joke robot on Twitter, voted the funniest weirdo joke robot on Twitter, actually. Do you think that you're speaking... Yes?
Yeah, that was nice.
It was Comedy Central, wasn't it, that named you the funniest
person
on Twitter? Not robot. Let's be serious here for a second. Do you think that you're speaking to people's short attention spans with the success that you've had on Twitter?
Definitely. Since it takes 1 second to read a tweet, certainly, yeah. I mean, I'm trying to exploit people's short attention spans and hopefully, you know, get them interested in my longer form stuff like articles or coming to see live stand-up. I mean, because you can't, you know, no tweet is as funny as live stand-up. You know, the hardest you've ever laughed, like on your deathbed, you're not going to be like, oh, that tweet. You're going to laugh about, you know, when you're... brother-in-law tripped over a cat and punched your mom, you know? That's what you're going to laugh about, is mom punching.
Absolutely. Who doesn't laugh at
tweeting.
A good mom punch? I mean, and speaking of, I think I'll use this opportunity to say hi to my mom, who is listening.
Hey, Mom.
There you go. Jay, you can do the same thing if you want. All love.
Hi, Ma. I'm not going to punch you. Unless... Kidding.
Jeez.
I can't take my mom. Are you kidding me? She's Greek.
Rob, you also write a weekly article for Vice Magazine, don't you?
That is correct, yeah.
What can you? What can we look forward to in the next couple of weeks? Are you going to do something on our fine town?
Oh, yeah. You know what? I'm not doing it right now because I'm writing a book right now, and I'm finishing that up right now. So I've actually kind of taken a hiatus. So I don't do it weekly now. Now I just do it whenever the mood hits me.
Okay, well, the Tumblr gets updated regularly, and I think a lot of people don't realize that you are much more than just your tweets. You act, you write, you quite the Renaissance man there, Mr. Delaney.
Well, I mean, I do all the regular crap that any, modern writer performer does. And I had been doing all that for some time. And then Twitter showed up and I just found that I really enjoyed writing those short jokes. So I'm as surprised as anybody by my, the amount of energy that I've devoted to Twitter what I've gotten out of it.
I get it, man. It's funny. It's easy to, and it's smart. I think for me, at least, that's the magic combination. I mean, you can be absolutely raunchy and filthy and then come up with something that really makes me think. And I appreciate the political stuff. And I apologize that we couldn't get Mitt Romney on tonight because I thought that really would have added something to the debate. Yeah, I that guy, he stands me up left, right, and center.
Kaufman doesn't have the pull he used to.
You know, back when I was co-running Bain Capital, life was different, Rob. We've got a couple of minutes left. A couple of minutes left with Rob Delaney right now, and I'd like you to take that opportunity to convince everybody to come down to Cafe Cleopatra and check out your shows.
You want me to do that?
Well, I mean, I can only do my best.
It's a strip club. How much does he have to?
Well, I mean, all I can say is that I work a lot. If you enjoy me on Twitter, I work many multiples of energy and caloric output harder. I don't think that was a sentence, so that probably didn't convince anybody. I put more effort into my stand-up than I do into my Twitter, and I've been doing it for a lot longer. And, I work very hard at it, and I try to savagely beat the audience, metaphorically, about the head, face, and shoulders, and make them laugh. Make them pee. I like it when pregnant women write me on Twitter and say that they've I caused them to pee during the show. That makes me happy.
Wow.
So I want involuntary physical responses when people come to the show. And if I can do that, then I've done my job. You know, I want you to sweat. People post pictures online frequently after they've seen my show if I like pose with them, and I've noticed now that I know the older and fatter I get, my boobs sweat. I mean, I don't have boobs per se, but like under my tit muscles, you can see sweat stripes. So I do sweat a lot when I'm doing stand up, which it means I'm putting out effort for you people.
Well, it's a small little club, so I imagine we'll all be sweating along with you. So I've got tickets for your last show, Rob, and we can get a nice shot of our sweaty man boobs together.
I'd like that.
Me too. Me too. Rob Delaney will be at the Just for Laughs Festival, the 25th, 26th, 27th, and 28th, all at the Strip Club on St. Laurent, Cafe Cleopatra. You can also see him open for Epic Mealtime, if that's your thing, on the 27th at 7 o'clock at night. Rob, thanks so much for your time tonight. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, gentlemen. Have a great evening.
Catch you in Montreal.
Bye-bye.
There he goes, Rob Delaney. No pressure, but the funniest man on Twitter.
Yeah, he says that, he puts a lot of effort into it. But when you watch his stand-up, it looks effortless. Because he looks like he's just having a conversation with the audience. He's more of a storyteller. And I love comedians like that. You could see that there are no set jokes. And it's just great. He looks like it's natural. He's just chilling in front of a bunch of people.
That was the first set of tickets that I've gotten for the festival.
Okay.
I'm going to the Muppet Gala. I'm going to.
Are you going to the Muppet Gala?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Are you going with Amanda Stein?
I believe
she's
already
a huge
has,
Muppet fan.
I know. I believe she already has tickets. So I offered her a ticket. She said she would let me know, and I have not heard back. So consider this the public shaming of Amanda Stein.
Yeah,
well, I built her up before. Now I'm breaking
Kaufman
her down.
Strikes out again.
Oh, ouch.
Anyway, Amanda even likes the fake Muppets, Disney Muppets.
You're listening to the Montreal Expos post-game show.
What?
On the Team 990.
Don't you do it, don't do it, don't you break my heart, please don't do it, don't you break my heart.
yourself. Now you wanna leave me for the love of someone else. My pride is all gone. I'm with her, I'm right along. I need you, baby. Will to keep on keeping on. And you know I tried to do my best. Well, I tried to do my best. Don't do it. Don't you break my heart.
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, wrapping up hour number two tonight. We're going to go back to the phones, 514-790-0990, 1-866-896-2546. Are we finally going to be joined by Mitt Romney?
No, I don't think so.
Unbelievable.
I think that ship has sailed, my friend.
Wow. Wow. And these people want us to vote for them. Oh, no, wait, wrong country. Okay.
Yeah,
nice. Let's go to Travis in, in North Carolina.
Okay.
Romney wants his
vote.
He's
eligible.
That's right. And I'd imagine being from the state that he's from, a lot of people will be voting for Mr. Romney down there. Hello, Travis. How are you?
Hi, and no.
Hi, and no. What's going on, man?
Happy anniversary, man.
Thank you very much.
Happy to that, yeah.
Thank you so much.
Kaufman show and tell, huh?
Yeah, look, come on, it's live, all right? We don't script this.
Should have dumped it.
Yeah.
You should have dumped it. We can cut it off the podcast, okay? Just bleep it. Make it sound like I said the filthiest thing ever there. Yes,
like,
Travis,
like you
hi.
Love Loria?
Like I what?
Like you I love Loria?
I love Loria. Yeah, that's it.
That's filthy.
That's pretty filthy. That's about as dirty as it would get on the Kaufman show, yeah. What's going on, man? How are you?
I'm doing good, you know, other than melting in the hot southern sun, you know.
Yeah, it's the same sun up here, dude.
Yeah,
it's insanely hot.
It's actually the same sun in
everywhere.
The entire
That's
solar
right.
system.
Even in the cold places, it's the same sun.
Yes, it is.
Wow. See, you learned something on the Kaufman show. It's not just who's going to be the third line center for the Montreal Canadiens.
Yes.
Well, that's the thing, though. I will bet you that in the coming months, I will get you to talk about basketball more because there's kind of not going to be any hockey.
Yeah, you think that's the way, eh?
Oh, yeah. Wow. You want to talk about union busting. Mitt Romney is going to turn into a hockey fan if Demme gets his way with that agreement, man. Yikes.
Say that one more time. Mitt Romney's going to turn into a hockey fan?
Yeah,
if Batman gets away with the agreement that he's proposed,
yes,
or tries to get away with it, we may have some trouble come October.
It would be very bad news for all of us, I think, if there was no hockey next year.
Well, unless you're hoping the draft lottery happens the way it did after the first lockout, and
that's true. The Habs did end up getting Carey Price out of that. I don't want to spend a year without hockey being played, speculating about what draft choice the Canadians got. We just did that for 3 months, and frankly, it sucked.
No, it did.
I mean, I don't. Whatever. Galianchuk might be great, as Jay said on Matthew Ross's show a couple of weeks ago.
Well, he's young. He's young. Do you want me to say what I actually said?
Yes.
All right. Well, he's young. He's 18 years old.
And
his balls haven't dropped yet.
Thank you.
So he's not ready.
Exactly.
He's not ready. And for those who say it's not the same as Latondres, that he doesn't have the pressure, well, guess what? He was our number one pick, a pick that people gathered around in bars to watch and cheered, you know, more than anyone's cheered for any hockey game this past season. Well, there is pressure there, and they expect a lot from him. Give the kid a break. Give him a year off. Let them learn.
Let the old balls drop. Travis, anything else?
No, just have a good show, man. Later.
Thank you so much for calling in. We really
I shocked him there. He's like, what is going on?
Travis, thank you. And thank you for all of your calls and tweets over the last year. We really appreciate it. Let's go to our next caller. Is this who I think it is? Conrad in Montreal.
Yeah, how are you?
Mr. Shatner, how are you, sir?
Not too bad. It's a long time that I have spoken to you.
Yeah, nice to hear your voice.
Yeah. First of all, I wanted to wish you a very, very happy anniversary.
Thank you so much, sir.
That's the most important thing. Your
really
program,
appreciate that.
Your program is what keeps me awake at nights, unfortunately.
I will take that as the compliment
I've heard
that
worse.
You meant it.
I've heard worse.
Thank you, sir.
Well, one thing I wanted to add, you know, we were discussing a little bit earlier how the comedian had been a Nordic fan and now he's supporting the Canadiens.
Yes.
So, you know, it reminds me of my youth.
Were you a Maroons fan, Conrad?
Pardon?
Were you a Maroons fan?
Yeah, well, not that far. I was in Windsor at the time when Detroit had the Greenberg and Garnier and Mickey Cochran.
Oh, my goodness.
And
for all of our audience who doesn't know, and I'm a student of the game,
yeah.
Mickey Cochran was one of the greatest catchers of all time,
yeah.
and a gentleman by the name of Mutt Mantle in Oklahoma admired him so much that he named his son after him.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a great catcher. And they had Schoolboy Rowan, they had Tommy Bridges. I developed a hatred for the Yankees because they used to beat the hell out of them, but other than that, they used to beat everybody else. Anyway, when I came to Montreal, of course, I was here, and I still supported them because there was no Montreal team except, of course, the Royals, and I supported them. And then, of course, when the Royals became the farm team of the Brooklyn Dodgers, I became a fan of the Dodgers, and I was very, very happy about that, except the year when Jimmy Ripple, who used to play for the Royals, played for Cincinnati in the World Series and knocked the hell out of Detroit, and they won the series from Detroit.
Who do you cheer for now, Conrad?
Well, the point very now, it's a very funny thing. When the Dodgers moved to Los Angeles, I felt greatly cheated, because as far as I was concerned, I knew the Expos wouldn't be there. Rosewood wouldn't be their
right.
main farm team. So I shifted to Pittsburgh Pirates for one reason only. That is because they had Roberto Clemente, they had Don Hoke, they had Rocky Nelson, out of whom had been playing for the Royals. So I switched my affiliation to them right through until the Expos came along. And now I've been sort of sitting in the back watching the Pirates, and thank God for the first time in 10 years, they got a team I can talk about.
They sure do, and in fact, I'm sitting here staring at a Pirates hat on my co-host's head right now.
I'm actually wearing one right now, Conrad, and only because I play, my team is called the Pirates. So,
Conrad, thank you so much for the call, and thank you for all of those late nights. I especially appreciated the night where I made fun of the Junos and their host, and then you called me and berated me on air for making fun of your younger cousin, William.
Jeez.
The host that night.
I've never seen Kaufman turn so red in my life.
It was wonderful. Conrad, thank you for your patronage.
We'll be in touch, and again, I'll be around, I hope, next year to wish you a happy anniversary again.
I know you will, and I can't wait. Thank you so much, Conrad.
Pleasure's mine.
Have a great night.
I like that guy.
Yeah, me too.
I like him.
He's all kinds of cool.
I love his voice.
Yeah, I thought I had a deep voice, but Conrad takes the cake.
He does. Yeah. He does. Mr. Shatner, one of the many loyal listeners of this show that range in age from 16 to high.
To high.
To high.
To high. Well, my grandmother's listening, and she's 98.
Hi, Grandma. Your grandmother's 98 years
she's
old?
She's 98 years old.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, great shape, too. Better memory than I have, I'll tell you that.
That goes back to a whole bunch of things.
By the way, shout out to my Pirates teammates, because I know they listen.
Like
so.
Don Hoke and Roberto Clemente.
Well, no, not exactly. Not even close, to tell you the truth. It's more like Spanky LaValliere and...
Andy Vance like?
No, not that. Maybe Jason Thompson. I'm just trying to say some bad Pirates. Nah, we've been struggling.
As bad Pirates?
As bad Pirates.
Oh, well. Yeah. As long as you're having fun out there, Jeff.
Shout out to Nick and the boys.
The hat looks too clean for you guys to be playing well.
I'm a first baseman. I don't roll around in the dirt too much.
Steph's got an update for you, and then we're going to be joined by Cabby Richards from TSN.
Nice.
Hopefully we won't get too up in his grill.
Oh, a lot of funny guys.
It's going to be a fun one, Jay. Halfway through, this is the Kaufman Show on TSN 990, the home of the Habs.
To the music played by the DJ on the radio. The cokes are in the icebox, popcorn's on the table. Me and my baby, we're out here on the floor.
from Mr. DJ. Keep those records playing, 'cause I'm having such a good time dancing with my baby. Everybody's swinging. Sally's doing that twist now. If you take requests, I got a few for you. Play that song called Soul Twist. Play that one called I Know. Don't forget them mashed potatoes. No other songs will do. Let me tell you, Mr. DJ, keep those records playing, 'cause I'm having such a good time dancing with my baby.
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Thank you to Sam Cooke for that one. I could listen to that all night.
I can listen to any Sam Cooke
night. I love him.
All day.
Soul, baby. Gotta love the soul.
Real soul.
We don't play very much fake soul.
No. No, but that's when soul was soul. Otis Redding, Sam Cooke.
Wilson Pickett. Mitch was talking about his jukebox. I think I have something to add to that collection for him.
You do?
Yeah, I have a 45 of Wilson Pickett doing Hey Jude.
Yes, I have heard that.
With Duane Allman on guitar.
Oh, my God, yeah. It's so good.
pick that up in a record store in Toronto last summer. If you ever head down Queen Street, if you get near the Much Music building, there's tons of record
shops. You have a record player?
I do.
Oh.
I do. I need a new needle, but I have a record player.
Good luck.
Why?
I don't know.
You can get that done.
Can you?
I'll tell you right now, right around the corner from where you work.
Urban Outfitters.
I was going to say Jack Layton's old audio place, the Layton Audio.
Okay.
Which is, I believe they have a fine array of records. But, you know, I was doing so well with the segue about Toronto and music to go to our next guest.
Yeah,
but
we went off on a tangent.
We did, but, you know, we're famous for that.
Yeah.
And let's get our next guest on the line. We're all huge fans of his. We were huge fans when he was at The Score, and now he's part of the big, happy TSN family that we're all a part of, and it's great to get him on the program. Cabby Richards from TSN, how are you, sir?
I'm good, man. I'm actually just on Queen Street. I know you guys were referring to Queen Street earlier.
Perfect.
And I hope that your listeners from Montreal don't, like, get upset with you guys for referencing spots in Toronto, because I know our cities have a little bit of a rivalry.
They do, but you know what? Any Montrealer that's felt the vibe on Queen, you know, pretty much from starting at the Horseshoe and then heading eastward till, I don't know, maybe about Jarvis. I think you can see there's a bit of a Montreal vibe on that street.
Well, it's not as pretty as your city. Like, like old Montreal, nothing in Toronto can touch that.
No, but it's history, you know? It's
yeah,
give it a couple of hundred years.
That. Like, our city is so young. Our city is, like, 200 years old. I mean, and, like, the oldest thing we have is probably our Parliament building, but nobody really hangs out there except for the 420 Festival, but that's for another show.
That's right. Actually, it could be for this show. We just, you know, we would have had to prep us better. how are you, Cabby? What's going on,
I'm wonderful. I just got off a plane from Pamplona, Spain. I'm a little tired, but it was pretty awesome.
Can you please tell us about running with the Bulls?
Yeah, but first of all, congratulations on the anniversary of your show.
Hey, thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
And you guys have I saw on Twitter, you guys have quite the lineup of guests. I feel honored to be a part of that message.
Well, tonight was super stellar. It was the 1 year, so we pulled out all the stops, and basically I sat down with Jay last week and said, okay, who hasn't been on the show that we really want to talk to, and let's just blow it all out of the water, and we'll figure out next week, and hey, if we have to air 4 hours of Jay and I singing next week, then that's what we'll do.
I'm sure that'll be awesome.
Well, Jay has a hell of a voice.
Yeah.
I can imagine. So Spain was, you know, it's like, I was telling a friend of mine, it was like, it's like spring break as far as like the absolute drunkenness is going. You know, I'll make it more Canadian. So like, when kids from Ontario do those like breakaway tours and they go to Quebec City and get absolutely like destroyed for a week.
Yeah.
That's what it's like as far as like drunkenness goes. Like when 17-year-olds are puking at the Dagobert and like Chez Maurice.
Nice references. That, like, well done.
And then like sleeping out on the outside of Shea Ashton trying to get a late night poutine. Like that's what it was like in Pamplona. Like all these tourists and none of the locals took part in the actual run. It was all like foreigners because everybody was speaking English and the locals were just watching out of their apartment windows at like these thousands of idiots running with these giant bulls.
The picture I have in my mind right now, and maybe it was the Chez Maurice and the Dagobert and the Ashton, but I'm picturing a bunch of bulls running wild through the streets of Quebec City.
That'd be something, right?
Is it kind of like crashed ice in Quebec City, but with bulls chasing the people on skates instead?
It kind of is. There's as much fear, and I mean, there's certainly the same amount of danger. I mean, those guys, I mean, it's 4-on-4 skating down that ice course for about a minute, and the running with the bulls, it takes about 2.5 minutes, 2 to 2.5 minutes, depending on if one of the bulls gets loose and separates from the pack and then just goes on its own tear. But it's like 8 o'clock in the morning, the first firework goes off, that lets us know the pen is open.
Oh my God.
One lets us know that all the bulls are out of the pen. And then there's a third one, but nobody hears the third one, because after the second one, there's just like there's just panic in the street, and then you know the bulls are just charging all the way to the bullfighting arena where they're kind of corralled.
Does this become kind of like a Grateful Dead concert type thing where you have a lot of repeat customers?
Ooh, that's a good question.
You'd think that maybe there's like an adrenaline rush that would come with this that would make you want to return every year.
There definitely is. I know that like I did it twice. So, I mean, like, their guys will do it in consecutive days. I don't know how many repeat, runners there were, because I met mostly first-timers, like myself. But I would recommend it. I was just talking today I would, like, for, like a stag party or a bachelor party idea, like, going to do the Running of the Bulls would be pretty fun.
Were you – I guess you weren't scared for your life then at any point.
No. I totally was afraid for my life, 100%. the first time was just, I didn't know what to expect. And I posted, like, I started in the middle of the course, which is called Dead Man's Corner, where the bulls, like, a lot of them, they slip and they slide into the fence. And then, I don't know, it makes them more pissed, but then they just charge even, it seems like they charge even harder. But I was absolutely afraid. And like, the second time, I think I was even more afraid. Because I knew what to expect, but then like you don't have any appreciation of how fast they run until they're running past you or at you.
You've done a lot of crazy things over the years, and frankly, we've witnessed a lot of it because it's cool to have a camera crew following you around when you're doing all the crazy stuff. Does this rank, or where does this rank for you?
I think as far as like. This is probably the craziest thing I've done. Like I last summer I did like walk on like the top of the CN Tower. They have this thing called the Edge Walk here in Toronto.
Right. That's a new, I saw that. I saw that in the Globe when it came out.
So I did that. That was really scary, but way more controlled obviously than these, 12 bulls running at you. And a few years ago I was, I did a bobsled run in Calgary at like 9 o'clock at night, and that still might be the most afraid I've ever been for this reason, because the bobsled is so unpredictable, and if that thing flips, you could be paralyzed.
Yeah.
So like that's what, and I know I could probably take being trampled by a bull, perhaps a gourd right in the spine, but I could probably take being trampled. And I saw some guys get absolutely crushed, and like it's so, and here's the thing. When you fall, they say when you fall, then they tell you not to get up until you get tapped on the shoulder, because then the coast is clear. But your natural instinct when you fall is to get right up. So I saw guys fall, get up, and then like trampled by other humans. And that's the element you don't really get an appreciation for when you're running, because the corridor gets smaller as more and more people kind of pile up on the sides. And then, and guys are like elbowing each other. Dudes are some guys are tripping, and then other people are just falling in front of you as you're running. So you just turn into like a friggin', you turn into Super Mario and you hit A and you start jumping over dudes. So it was pretty crazy, man.
What I do to have the sound effects to play along right now. See, I told you he had a good voice, Cabin.
Yeah, it's kind of nice.
Before we let you go, Cabby, because I know you've you just got off a plane. First of all, when are we going to be able to see this on TSN?
This airs on Friday during Sports Center. So I think it's like six. I think Sports Center is 6 or 6:30, and then 11, and then 1 and 2, and so on and so forth. So,
all the way through the night, right?
Yeah. So I edit on Wednesday is when I'll start to put this thing together, and then Friday everybody will be able to see it.
Very quickly before we let you go, I know you're tight with a bunch of the Jays, and as dire as things look, they're still only a game and a half out of the wild card.
And you know what? And like, I know that the starting pitching rotation has been like decimated, but they're still like, guys are still playing like as though the season, obviously they're not totally out of it, and they're not even close to being out of it, but guys are still playing hard, and they're all taking sort of solace in the fact that those arms will return to the lineup. So, I mean, you know, thankfully it's kind of happening around the midway point and not like, you know, August or September where it would be, you know, the Jays would be in a tighter squeeze. But with this, you know, with them adding extra wild card spots, I mean, that's one of the best decisions baseball's made. And baseball is like so behind all the other leagues. But you know, it's a great way to kind of keep the interest of the fans, and certainly in Toronto, because man, the Jays haven't made the playoffs since '93, so it's been a full 20-year drought. And even though we had Roy Halladay and we had Clemens for a couple of years, you know, it would be nice to actually get a sniff of the playoffs again.
Boy, '93 was good to us, in Canada, a Stanley Cup and a World Series.
Oh yes, and then it could have '94 could have been, man, Expos versus Jays. What would happen if kind
yes.
of moments.
The revisionist history on that one would be, you know, we wouldn't be talking right now because there'd be an Expos game on the radio.
Yeah, you're right. And I think you guys probably would have dominated us. You guys have so many Hall of Famers on your team.
Oh, you're too sweet.
No, it's the truth, man.
Cabby, I want to thank you so much for jumping on with us tonight. We really appreciate it, and hopefully we can talk sometime down the road.
For sure. Thanks for having me on, fellas. And enjoy again, congratulations on the 1 year.
Thank you, sir.
And we're glad that your video is going to be on TSN and not When Animals Attack.
It could be there, too, but hopefully you see it on TSN first.
Cheers. Cabby Richards from TSN. Follow him on Twitter at TheRealCabby. Thank you, sir.
My pleasure, guys.
Have a great one. There he goes, Cabral Richards. Yeah. I do love Cabby, man. Huge fan. Have been for a long time. And, we just keep... We just keep ticking off those A-listers on the Kaufman Show tonight.
Nice to see when the animals have the advantage, huh? Hey, my chuck wagon racing friends. Nice to have the animals have the advantage once in a while.
Let's talk some horse when we get back.
All right.
Got some glue?
I got...
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. It's a blueprint. It's our plan. Yeah, that's right. We're back. It's the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar. That was Blueprint by Arkells. Good friends of the show. We appreciate their music. Mr. Farrar.
Yes?
You were quite vocal this week.
I was?
You're always quite vocal, okay. Frankly. But you were quite vocal this week about chuck wagon racing.
Yes.
You went on a few different rants through social media.
Yeah.
And I got the impression that this is something that you give a damn about.
Yeah.
So,
I do.
you know, here we are. We've got a radio show, and you're more than welcome to
listen,
voice your opinion.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Dave.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
I don't want to be one of those righteous guys. You know, I'm not an extremist. I'm not Sea Shepherd. I'm not PETA. I'm nothing of the sort. I've gone fishing. I have nothing against hunting, so long as the animal is consumed and used. I'm not one of those people that put animals' intelligence and feeling on par with humans, because I know very well that this is not true.
No, you're simply talking about this event at the Calgary Stampede.
This one event. Now, don't get me wrong. I do enjoy the Calgary Stampede. I think it's important. I think it's great for Alberta. I've been to Alberta many, many times.
Really?
I've enjoyed it. Yes,
many,
I have.
Many times.
Well, three times.
That's more than two.
That's many times.
Yeah,
okay,
absolutely.
That counts. And I have nothing against it. It's just this chuck wagon race that bothers me. There's something wrong here. It's the only event in which any animals were killed or injured.
Right.
That I know of, anyway. There might have been some other freak accidents that happened.
Every year, Jay, there are deaths of horses at the chuck wagon races.
Right.
And there was a big, passionate article written about the Stampede this weekend in, I believe, the Globe and Mail. And they basically said that this is the biggest cash cow of the Stampede.
Exactly.
And the chuck wagons are covered with advertising.
Right.
And for as long as that continues, horses will continue to die. Now, the counterpoint also, which one of our colleagues at the station emailed out today, was an article talking about how all of these horses would have been killed a long time ago. And they're all horses that couldn't race anymore, were too injured or too old to be money makers for their owners, and the chuck wagon racers basically give them a second chance.
Okay, that's a hell of a second chance, isn't it? You know, listen, I know a lot of people said, someone else said that horses like running. This is one of the arguments. Horses love running. They love doing that. Well, you know what? I like playing baseball, too. But okay. I don't like playing baseball with three other 250-pound guys attached to me and being surrounded, going at top speed by other sets of 250-pound guys going 100 miles an hour.
His baseball metaphor isn't working anymore, is it?
No, it's not. But you know what I mean.
I do.
You know, and yes, they like running, but they also don't like breaking all four of their legs, having their aortas blow up, and then being trampled by three other wagons. I mean, this is not running. This is not enjoyable, you know. And by the way, yes. How do you know that horses like running? I mean, we could assume that they enjoy running free, but I'll tell you what.
I think it's a horse whisperer thing, Jay.
Yeah, is that what
it
is?
Although the horses don't whisper to the humans, do they? It's the other way around, I think.
Well,
I don't know.
Apparently to some humans they do. Okay? Now, sure, you know, I can say with full confidence that no horse is enjoying lying on its back with multiple critical injuries and just waiting to be pulled out of its misery.
Do you feel the same way about like thoroughbred racing or about the hippodrome that used to be over here?
No,
why not? I mean,
the horses are a little bit more free.
They're
not hooked up to a wagon.
Barbaro. We saw Barbaro euthanized on the grounds. It's that happens more often than not. It's just that we only watch three horse races a year, which means we watch a combined 4.5 minutes of horse racing a year.
There's just something about the chuck wagon race that it's just not right. And anybody who says, well, if you don't like it, don't watch it or don't listen. This is not Howard Stern. Okay. This is not Howard Stern. This is not Don Cherry.
Baba Booey.
Yeah. You don't tell people not to watch something if they don't like it. When you see something on the news and you say, wow, that's horrible that this person died or this is, or people are suffering in this country, do you turn it off and say, well, I'm not going to watch that. I don't like it.
Is it televised?
The chuck wagon race, I believe locally it's televised. It's got to be. I mean, the footage of it was pretty clear. It was in HD quality.
Well, yeah,
well.
But that could be for the big screen at the place.
It could be, but I assume that it probably is televised, probably locally. I don't think any of the major sports networks show
like,
it.
Like, is this a conversation about cultural sensibilities and where some an Albertan will say to us, hey, man, this is our thing. We've been doing this since the dawn of man.
Screw your thing. Lynching was a thing, too.
Well, okay. Is this comparative to the dogfighting culture in the Southern United States? Is this compared to cockfighting in the Dominican Republic?
Yeah, well, some things have to go the way of the dinosaur.
I agree, Jay. Yeah. I agree. It's really easy for us to project our sensibilities on others.
It's easier to claim that it's a part of our heritage or it's our God-given right to do so. You know, things are obsolete. You know, yep. People said that lynching and public hangings. Well, that's our God-given right. This is justice our
Whoever
way.
Whoever said that?
Huh?
What? How's that point going to get across?
Okay. Well, it was done, wasn't it?
Well, okay, yeah. Sure.
You know, and at the time, it made sense
to everybody. We're traveling back, though, now. We're not...
It's chuck wagons. What do you mean traveling? Talking about traveling back. Chuck wagons. Really? What is this? 1871? Chuck wagons?
If it was sexy, I'd say find the Bonanza theme, but...
I don't mind the heritage point, and I know the Calgary Stampede's very important, and I support it. I don't mind it. I like the events.
But people can still go and get drunk and wear cowboy hats without having a chuck wagon race. And I'm sure there are other places that the advertising could be had. Again, I mean, I don't know if this is me being civilized and trying to civilize the world like Will McAvoy last night.
Yeah.
But listen, trust me, once you see that, you'll get that.
I don't deny what I am. I'm an animal just like anybody else.
Yeah, nobody's going to make you
run. I just happen to be top of the food chain.
Nobody's making you run a chuck wagon
That's
around
right.
in circles.
Animals are not for wagon racing. They are for eating. This is very clear. I just dispelled my whole point.
Vegetarians of the world, unite.
And, it's stupid. It's
you can reach
stupid.
Jay at
oh boy.
Care of TSN 990 Radio.
Thank you very much.
1310 Green Avenue.
No, well, they're going to come
300
here now.
Westmount, Quebec.
That's great.
H something 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 something.
You're going
to
get shot.
No, you know what, Jay? I appreciate your passions. I think it's nice to... I like poking the bear.
Well, you poked it.
Good.
Don't poke. You know, I'll poke a bear, too. I don't care. And I'm not an animal rights activist. I don't care about that stuff. I don't care about fishing. And
obviously,
hunting.
You do.
Well,
obviously, you do because...
I care when it serves no purpose.
You care when you can look into their big, beady eyes and see their souls.
No, it's not that either. I really don't think animals have souls. No, I don't care. I'm not one of those people that thinks that they have a personality and they know what's going on. They're stupid. They're animals.
This is so clear. This is my fourth co-host in a year.
If they were smart enough, they wouldn't be in a chuck wagon race.
And some this works. I got to say, your views are a little off.
They're off?
But I love how you say them.
I say what I feel.
Good.
Yeah.
Keep doing it.
I'm neither right nor left. I am both and all.
I believe that you referred to it one day on air as Shades of Gray.
Shades of Gray, because that's what the world is.
That's for Ron Razor. This is the Kaufman Show. We'll be back with Ben Christensen in a few minutes. Steph's going to let you know what's going on in the world of sports. What's going on in the world of sports, Steph?
A lot of signings.
A lot of signings. All right, some real exciting stuff. Get your notepads out. You're going to need to know who these people that have signed are. For what, fantasy purposes? Are you talking about CFL signings?
We got some hockey, NHL signings, some NFL signings.
Mark Trestman signed today, right? I mean, that's massive. You know, if that had happened during our show, Jay, we would have had to restart the whole show. Somebody would have sent out a tweet. It would have been a Zerkowski tweet.
Yeah.
And then suddenly we would have had to scramble. Brian Wild, Francois Gagne. Oh, no, wait, that's for when the Canadians hire a coach. Sorry, I got confused. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar. That was the cover of Talkin' Softball, recorded just for us. First time anybody's ever recorded a song for me.
Isn't that sweet?
It was pretty damn cool. I'd like to thank the members of Phantom Shores, a wonderful band based in our nation's capital, Ottawa, Ontario. Thank you all for your efforts for that. We did a Simpsons Spectacular back in March to honor the 20th anniversary of Homer at the Bat, one of my favorite Simpsons episodes of all time. Probably right up there with, what's it, Like Father, Like Clown? The crusty Jackie Mason one, or the monorail episode?
Yeah.
So we had Steve's
Baron.
The Beer Baron. That's a good one. I don't know if it wouldn't rank up there for me, Steph, but I appreciate your contribution to the fold.
I think the monorail one is my favorite episode ever.
Written by Conan O'Brien.
Yeah.
This is a debate we'll have another day.
Okay.
But needless to say, we could spend 4 hours talking about The Simpsons. And
well, you can.
I could.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. And you would have to go along with it willingly.
I would.
And you did at our tribute show.
I did. You lost me at a point, but yeah,
that's
I
okay.
Did.
We got you back.
Yeah.
We got you back with Steve Sachs, didn't we?
Yes, you did. Yeah.
That was one of the best shows, one of the most fun shows we've ever done was that Simpsons
Spectacular.
We
had quite a lineup that day as well.
David Silverman, Rick Miller from Macomber, Steve Sachs, Andrew Buchholz from Yahoo, Nick Dyka from Arkells. It was a pretty stellar, solid love affair with The Simpsons. I encourage you all to check it out. And who knows, maybe sometime in the next couple of weeks, we'll play you some of the best of that. In the meantime, let's make it a baker's dozen, eh?
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 That's 13.
It is 13, eh?
I knew that.
Benjamin Christensen informed me today that he's been on the show a dozen times. So I thought, hey, let's make this 13. Because, you know, 13 is such a lucky number.
It is. Well, it was Friday the 13th, just passed.
It was. It yeah. was. Well, you know, some of the greatest ball players of all time. Some of the cleanest, most reputable ball players of all time. Alex Rodriguez comes to mind.
Oh, man. Jeez.
Benjamin Christensen is the most passionate baseball fan I know. We met in New York City a couple of months back, but he's been on the show for a while now, and he is currently on a tour of Major League Baseball cities, stadiums. The dude is... he's having fun, and we're going to check in with him right now. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Dave.
How are you, sir?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm fantastic, man. We're having a blast tonight.
Nice. I got to point out, I'm surprised you went with Alex Rodriguez with the number 13 as opposed to the great Omar Vizquel.
Ah, right.
I'm ashamed of that one.
I guess I apologize.
Then. Jeff Facero.
Oh, that's a good one.
Jeff Facero.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Nice. Nice.
That's all. That's all I got.
That's it. That's it. So welcome back for a triumphant return to the show, Ben.
Yeah, congratulations on the 1 year anniversary.
Thanks. We're happy to have you be a part of it.
I'm thrilled, honestly.
Where are you right now?
You guys have a great show, and so I always enjoy being here every Monday.
Thanks. Where are you right now? Where have your travels taken you?
I'm actually staring at San Francisco State University right now.
Oh, you're kidding me. Say hi to Max.
I will.
All right.
saw your pick on Twitter there. Beautiful. From right field in San Francisco.
It was gorgeous. Beautiful day. The weather was, obviously fantastic. Very warm, too, which is really kind of surprising for San Francisco. I'm staring at an overcast sky right now, but oddly enough, if I were to go to the stadium right now, it would be nice and sunny, which is like just a really weird spot to be in. And that's how every trip to San Francisco always goes for me.
Well, I guess you bring it with you then, right?
Yeah, or I'm at the nexus of the universe, I can't quite explain that.
Wow, okay. Well, good to know that your ego hasn't suffered in the last couple of weeks. Now, your head's so big now, I can only imagine how it's going to be in a couple of days.
Tomorrow and Wednesday are going to be the most ridiculous days on this trip.
Well, I know about Wednesday. Why don't you fill me in on tomorrow?
Tomorrow is going to be the first time I've been to the Coliseum in a year, but most importantly, it's going to be the first time I get to hang out with all the beloved ace friends of the family that I made during my experience in New York and et cetera, and I cannot wait to go party it up with them.
Just to give our audience a little bit of context, Ben is a very big Expos fan, but the team that mm-hmm. is the closest to his heart are the Athletics of Oakland.
Absolutely.
And... I guess that's going to be pretty cool now on Wednesday. So you get to hang out with all the A's fans tomorrow, which will be great. On Wednesday, you'll be on the field.
Yeah. When I got back to Oregon, they gave me an email and asked me if I want to throw out first pitch.
Wow.
And that's by far going to be probably the number one MLB-related experience I'm ever going to have in my life. It's always kind of been a dream to obviously play on the field. As a kid growing up, like a lot of kids, I always wanted to play pro ball. But then when you get older, you realize, yeah, you're really not up to MLB snuff. So
we all get there, man.
Exactly. So just getting out there for one throw is going to be pretty amazing.
Have you been practicing?
Oddly enough, no.
Really? Wow.
I know I should be. I just haven't come across anybody who has a glove. Even though I've got mine and a bag full of balls in my trunk. And
you have a Twitter account with a lot of power on it. I think you should be tweeting out, "Will somebody please catch me?"
I'm really kind of interested to see how that would go. I'm going to give it a shot tomorrow.
That or you know, do the Bob Feller, man. Paint a barn, step 60 feet one way, and go for it.
Okay.
Now, this is something that's very important to me. I noticed that most people who throw out ceremonial first pitches do not toe the rubber.
Oh, I'm going the rubber.
Yeah, okay, good.
what's your plan? Are you going to a little breaking pitch, or are you going to go? Because if it was me, I would inform the catcher first, and I am going to town. I am going to throw that ball as hard as possible, right over the plate, if possible. And, you know, I'm going to try and get it up in the high 70s. I used to be able to throw it about 80 miles an hour. Now, if I can throw it, and I'd ask them to radar it as well, what's your plan for this, Ben?
So the plan for this is I'll actually start the last week. Josh Reddick hit me up on Twitter and volunteered to catch for me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was really blown away by that. And then we kind of exchanged, you know, tweets and stuff like that. And so my intention is to just gun it in as hard as I can over the plate.
Good.
If I can hit 70, I'll be happy. More than likely, it's probably going to be around 62. I think that was the last time I clocked myself, and that was like 3 years ago.
You want to sub in when you come to Montreal on my team? We might be able to use a guy like you.
Well, and speaking of, you will get that opportunity, Ben, because I believe that after your California adventures are over, then you make your way to Canada, don't you?
Absolutely. I'll be in Toronto on the 25th or the 29th, and the evening of the 29th, I'll be taking the train over to Montreal to hang out with you guys for about a week.
Very excited. We're going to have you in studio on the 29th. We're going to get you as much baseball as you want or can get in a city like Montreal. Looking forward to taking you down to the Olympic Stadium, to the Jackie Robinson statue, maybe heading over to Laurier Downs. And, well, we've got this Fenway trip that we've got to figure out, too.
Yes, absolutely.
But I'm telling you, Ben, you're going to fall in love with Montreal. You're not going to want to leave.
I'm not going to be surprised by that. from what I've seen of photos and such, it looks a lot like Portland, and I definitely love Portland. So I don't see that as going to be any bit of a surprise to me if I fall in love with Montreal.
Ben Christensen, you can follow him on Twitter at Shaka Brody, Shakabrodie. Best of luck throwing out the first pitch. We'll be watching.
I appreciate that. Take care, guys.
And we'll catch you soon. There he goes, Ben Christensen. Welcome back to the Kaufman Show, where we try and bring you all of the most up-to-date information to get you through your day. saw something interesting. Seattle Sounders. They play what they call soccer in that thing that's called the MLS. I think that's how you pronounce it, with the right cadence, right? MLS. Good, good. Looks of approval from all over the studio. Very refreshing. 18 times this year, the Seattle Sounders have played at the same time as the Mariners. Sorry, is it this year or is it over the last two? Regardless, 18 times the Mariners and the Sounders have lined up and played on the same day.
Okay.
Over half those times, the Sounders have scored more than the Mariners.
That's not good.
No.
No. No, it's not.
No, it's not. This is the same Seattle Mariners who have been no-hit and perfect game this year. Is that a word? Perfect gamed?
Perfect gamed,
somebody,
yeah.
Get perfect gamed?
They were perfectionized.
And that guy perfect gamed me. So, yeah, I don't think that works.
There's some reports coming in that Ichiro's all done, too. So
Ichiro's pretty all done, man.
Yeah.
It's kind of depressing.
Yeah.
But, you know, Ichiro, when he was a rookie, was not the average age of a rookie.
No. No, he wasn't.
He'd already had a decent career in Japan.
Imagine that. And he's going to be a Hall of Famer, too.
Of course.
Yeah.
Unquestionably. What I find interesting are these, somebody wrote an article this week, Barry Bloom from MLB.com, who's a very good writer, but I don't know where this was coming from, that Derek Jeter should be the MVP. That seems insane to me. I know he's like fourth in the league in hits, but I would like to think that the New York Yankees would be okay if Derek Jeter wasn't hitting.
Yeah. Well, we know it's not going to be Joey Votto, that's for sure.
Why? He's only out for 3 to 4 weeks.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Torn meniscus? That's rather optimistic, 4 weeks.
Well, let's see if when he comes back, if he continues being the...
Of course he plays first base. So
the most difficult...
It's coach. Meaningless. Believe me, I know.
He's... what was the stat that came out last week? That he's hit one foul ball this year or something?
Really?
Yeah. Just insane.
That's really weird. I don't know what to make of that.
That he can put the ball where he wants to put it.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, he is the... well, he's the best Canadian baseball player, that's for sure. And if you want to talk about hopes riding for Canada at the World Baseball Classic, which I'm kind of afraid that I'm the only person in this country that cares about it.
I really like it.
That tournament means so much to me. It's the only baseball team that I can really cheer for, that I feel the highs and I feel the lows.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unfortunately, the cream of the crop for Canada is not going to be available for the play-in tournament, of which they need to win. They're playing a mini tournament in Germany in the fall. Canada, Germany, the Czech Republic, and the United Kingdom. And before you automatically say, oh, well, Czech Republic, and, you know, I saw Canada lose to Italy.
To Italy,
in
yeah.
Baseball.
Yeah.
And it, other than the day that the Expos left, that is the most heartbroken I've been to the baseball game.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, man, I left.
This
I
is a
left
different
to
team.
Go smoke a cigarette. I was so upset and yeah. Came and had to buy a ticket to go back in. I mean, this was the most depressing game because it was a fait accompli. Max Harris and I walked into that stadium knowing that Canada was going to win.
Right.
First pitch, you could see. There was a bunt. The Canadian pitcher, Bowman, I think it was, mishandled it. And right away, you knew. It was just like, okay, maybe we shouldn't take these kids for granted.
Yeah, but how many times are you going to catch lightning in a bottle? I mean, we have to say Canada does have the best chance out of these four teams.
Yes, you know, yes. Canada has the best chance out of these four teams, but we don't know what the roster is.
And am I to understand that this is for qualification in the Olympics?
Or? No, this is to get into this is the play-in.
The play-in.
To get into the World Baseball Classic.
Oh, okay, the World, yeah,
because
sorry.
Yes. There are certain teams, if you won or were in the top two in your group last time around,
right.
Then you qualify automatically.
Okay.
But because Canada was not, two teams went through to the next round from Toronto in 2009. Venezuela and the United States. Canada and Italy were relegated.
Okay.
If Canada doesn't win this tournament, they don't get into the WBC, which I think messes with Bud Selig's plans of having some of the games played in Toronto.
Uh-huh. And obviously, they won't be fielding an A team here, so...
No.
Still, at the same time, I mean, come on.
I don't know.
I know. I don't want to be cocky, you know, well, kind of jinx them, you know?
That's kind of what got me into trouble last time.
Yeah.
And that was a team with Russ Martin and Votto and well, a very young Brett Laurie on it.
Right.
Brett Laurie's first ever appearance, I guess you can, I mean, it's not a major league game, but you can consider it sort of the major league conditions and feelings. He pinch ran in the bottom of the ninth inning for Canada, was put out at second base, big rally. We ended up losing the game 6-5 to the States. But I asked him about it when I spoke to him, and he said that it was just the craziest feeling to be out on this field for the first time ever wearing a Canadian uniform and Derek Jeter's at second base.
I know, eh?
Just,
I'd like to put together one day just for kicks an all-time Canadian team and just to see who would play at each position.
I don't think that would be too difficult.
It'd be a good team when you think about it, if you go back far enough.
There would be some holes, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, how far back are we going? Is George Sisler
all time?
The team?
All time.
Is that his name? The Yankee? There was a great Yankee that I think that when Babe Ruth broke the home run record for the Yankees.
He beat George Sisler's record.
Okay, and I believe that George Sisler's Canadian.
And he went on to break it like 586 times. He did it throughout his career.
Well, and now the all-time Canadian home run leader, would that be Walker?
That would be Larry Walker. Beat up on Terry Poole's record.
Still can't believe a car beat him.
What?
You heard me. I still can't believe a car beat him.
Okay.
And you know what? Larry Walker pays his taxes in Canada.
Yes, he does. And he did for many years.
Some cars don't. This is the Kaufman Show, and we'll be back.
Bring it all back to me. Just bring it all back to me. That's a record.
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Jeez, Jay, we should play more hip-hop.
Yes, we should.
Speaking of, special guest around the corner. But right now, our all-time favorite Kaufman Show guest.
Can we say that?
I've said it several times. I think so, too. I know you feel that way, and I know I feel that way.
Not to insult anybody else.
No, but not at all, but nobody better represents what we're trying to do and what we're all about than our next guest, whose name I will pronounce properly. Dave Zirin is the editor of The Nation, the sports section of The Nation, which is one of the oldest magazines in the United States. He is their first ever sports editor. You can see him in Sports Illustrated, his own website, Edge of Sports, where sports and politics collide. We're all big fans. Welcome to the show, Dave Zirin. How are you, sir?
Oh, it's great to be here. It's an honor to be on this show in particular.
Oh, well, thank you, sir. It's our one-year anniversary tonight, and can't think of anybody else we'd rather have on for shenanigans than you.
Oh, thank you. Let's get with the shenanigans then.
Well, unfortunately, the first shenanigan is really, you know, I said this off the top of the show. I think that Penn State is probably the biggest sports story of our time, at least in the year that we've been doing this. I have not come across a bigger story than what's going on at Penn State right now. And you wrote an article this week, which you can find in The Nation, which does not call for the banning of the football program. And I thought that was very interesting. It was the first time that I'd seen it written out that way. Everybody else was calling for heads to roll and for them to get the death penalty. You weren't. Why is that?
Oh, well, I mean, three very basic reasons. And let me start by saying from the giddy up that from day one, like, I've wanted the hammer to come down on the entire culture, which just reeks to high heaven in NCAA football that led to this happening, because I agree with Louis Free, former FBI director. I agree with his report that the culture of reverence for college football causes too many scandals like this to go unchecked. And that's the root cause of this thing. But I'm against Penn State's football program being shut down for three very basic reasons. I mean, first and foremost, you shut down the Penn State football program, bang. Immediately, you know what you're doing. You're ending the athletic department at Penn State. You're ending hundreds of athletic scholarships. You're ending the entire women's sports program. And you're ending thousands upon thousands of jobs, hot dog vendors, beer vendors, people selling bottled water at the side of the road before games. You're going to cause thousands upon thousands of people to suffer and thousands upon thousands of people who had nothing to do with Jerry Sandusky, Joe Paterno, or or the people who are responsible for covering up these crimes. That's the first thing. The second reason why I think it's so important is that the only argument that one can make why everybody should suffer is this idea that says, well, all of State College, Pennsylvania is somehow responsible for this. That, and this is an argument that's very well trafficked, that it's somehow this mass culture that caused everybody to turn a blind eye. As if everybody is Mike McQueary, the former assistant coach, mm-hmm. who saw Jerry Sandusky raping a kid in the shower and did nothing about it. And that argument is just, I mean, it sounds good, and it might satisfy our need for vengeance, but it's just not the truth. It is not the truth to say that if everybody knew what was going on, they wouldn't have cared because they care about football more than they care about the lives of these young kids. It's just not true. And if I lived in State College, I would be profoundly offended by that supposition. And then though there's the last argument, and this is the one that's really key and the one that I really want people to take home. Look, you wouldn't call upon Tony Soprano to beat up the neighborhood drug dealer, because if you did, you're just giving yourself a bigger problem. And calling upon the NCAA to solve this problem, to actually legitimize the NCAA as somehow this force of morality that strikes down the evildoers in his path, all you are doing is actually strengthening the very hand that ensures that scandals like this will happen in the future. I mean, the NCAA, they are the fox guarding the hen house. They are the people with the vested interest in this very culture of reverence that is at the root of the problem here. And so what I'm saying is, look, this is not like SMU where players are getting cars, something that's not illegal, or Ohio State players getting free tattoos, something which, you know, according to the public law of the land, is not illegal. The civil and criminal courts will take their pounds of flesh from Penn State, as they should. The NCAA should just let the grown-ups do their job and shut their mouths in this. And I think all of college sports would be better off if the NCAA is actually weakened in this process and not strengthened. And if they're the ones with the hammer, then they will emerge from this stronger and not weaker.
We're in conversation with Dave Zirin from The Nation and from Edge of Sports, and we're discussing the NCAA. And I find it very interesting, Dave, because it's such an all-powerful organization. And they obviously, I mean, they run it and seem like they're running it into the ground right now. And I wonder what steps can be taken. Would it be Congress? And we know how effective that can be. But, you know, I where can this go from here? How can people spend so much time talking about how the president shouldn't be sticking his nose into the business of college football and regulating some sort of a playoff? What if the president was sticking his nose into the business of college football or college sports and maybe weeding out some of the corruption?
I mean, I think that is a case where we're talking about time well spent. I think people don't like politicians getting involved in sports when it's just to hold these sham hearings and get in front of the cameras, but actually don't do anything to change anything. I mean, and it's so obvious to people that these politicians, they're engaged in this theater of the absurd just to get the simulcast coverage on C-SPAN and ESPN, and it confirms one of the oldest tropes about Washington, D.C., that politics is just Hollywood for ugly people, and all they want is to be on camera as much as possible. But if you had something that actually said, you know what, like, we need to do something about the fact that you have the NCAA, which is a nonprofit whose president, Mark Emmert, just gave himself a 40% raise, makes just under $2 million a year, has 14 vice presidents, each of whom make at least $200,000 a year. They sell the likenesses of players on everything from credit cards to jerseys to video games. Players don't see a dime. This is an utterly corrupt system with no moral basis to it whatsoever that actually threatens to collapse under the weight of its own corruption. And I think we should try to be thinking of ways that we can hasten that collapse. And the idea of the NCAA coming in, wielding the hammer of Thor and taking down Penn State, that actually strengthens its hand going forward. I want to be the person who says, well, wait a minute, you realize that Notre Dame just uncovered this huge rape scandal involving football players and female members of campus. Where's the NCAA on that? Well, they would say, oh, well, that's not, you know, a recruiting issue or a football issue. Let the authorities handle it. Well, you know what? That only exposes the hypocrisy of the NCAA. And I think they look for situations that show them in the best light. And this is one of those situations where the scandal is so immense, as you said from the top, the call has gone far and wide. The NCAA, you got to do something. You got to do something. Well, you know what? The cure is actually worse than the problem in this case. And if they shut down Penn State football, you know, the people who are going to get hurt is that the 18-year-old volleyball player, the guy who sells hot dogs at Saturday's games, it's not going to do anything to repair the problems of big-time college football or the bigger problems in State College, Pennsylvania.
The last time we spoke, Dave, we talked about Governor Corbett. And frankly, you thought that his head should roll. Now, The fact that he's the person who appointed Louis Freeh, do you think that that gives him a little bit more credibility?
No, I think it gives him less. Because if you look at what he said about Louis Freeh, and I tweeted a little bit of this today, is that he says proudly, it's like, I know Louis Freeh, he's a terrific person, he's the person I recommended, and he's the one who's going to get this done. Clearly, there's a prior relationship there. And when I read Louis Freeh's report, and I did read the whole 267-page thing, I mean, I thought it was very, very shocking for what it exposed, and good for him for exposing it. Like, for example, the fact that Joe Paterno, without question, had knowledge about Sandusky dating back to 98, which is different than what he told both the grand jury and Sally Jenkins in his last interview. But also, what it didn't tell and what it didn't speak about at all was Governor Tom Corbett. It didn't speak about the Second Mile Foundation. It didn't speak about the culpability of actual members of the Board of Trustees. There were some throwaway lines about the board. And Louis Freeh is somebody who, you know, growing up, you know, was an Eagle Scout, former federal judge, head of the FBI. This is someone who has made his life and made his living as a apparatchik of institutional power. And this is one of those cases where he did his job and he did it very well, which is he went after the people who institutional power, a.k.a. Tom Corbett, wanted him to go after. And nary a spotlight on Tom Corbett himself. And this infuriates me and it enrages me because it's easy to go after the dead guy. And it's easy to go after the people who are already either indicted or fired or facing criminal charges. It's a lot harder to look at the people who are attempting to now build themselves up on the basis of this scandal, who did nothing while Jerry Sandusky was hurting these kids. And what's so disturbing about that is that as long as you even have one person left in power who's somehow culpable for this mess, you're taking the chance that it could happen again. So, yeah, I want to see – I don't only want to see Tom Corbett's head to roll. I mean, I want to see him indicted. I mean, I want to see him under subpoena. I want him to answer questions under oath about why he was raising money with the Second Mile Foundation deep into 2010, even after knowing this investigation of Sandusky was happening. I want him to answer why he took 2 years to do anything about Sandusky. I mean, these are important questions, and all he's done as the din has risen for him to answer these questions is deflect and deny and – I mean, that's just not good enough.
Can you make any sense of Bill James over the last few days, Dave?
No.
Me neither.
No,
I don't understand why he's even stepping into this.
No, I have no idea. And the idea that somehow it was perfectly acceptable for older men to shower with young boys.
Yeah, what is up with that
40
quote,
years ago,
eh?
And the idea that he wants to share this worldview with us. I mean, let's just say, I don't know. I just think there's clearly something else going on here. I don't know what it is. And I don't know if it has to do with prior relationships. I don't know if it has to do with the fact that I'm honestly scared to even make a joke out of it.
I hear you, man. I was shocked when I saw it.
It feels like a joke. Like, is this guy kidding? Is this a Daniel Tosh routine, or is this something that's actually real that Bill James is saying this? It seems bizarre that he's stepping in on this. And I just want to say to Bill James, like, look, unless you have some sort of statistical analysis that sheds light into the instances of child sodomy, I don't really want to hear you talk at all about this subject.
I think that's a very fair thing to say, Dave. What can we expect from you this week on either at Edge of Sports or through the Nation?
Oh, man.
That much, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot going on. I'm out on vacation this week. This is the one week I get off with my kids, and then this story breaks. I got something that just posted tonight at the New York Times website where we're debating this whole question, and I'm the punching bag who gets to say that Penn State shouldn't have their football program. abolished. And let me tell you, like, I understand that good people can have different opinions about this, and I totally understand the desire for vengeance and the desire to see Penn State suffer as humanly possible. I just want people to ask the question, like, think about all the ways you want to see Penn State change. And this is the question I'm going to be asking this week. Think about your wish list of how you'd like to see Penn State change, and then ask yourself if you think the NCAA is the proper tool for making that happen.
Dave Zirin from Edge of Sports. Follow him on Twitter at Edge of Sports. He's also with The Nation, and he's our favorite guest for a reason. You just heard why over the last 15 minutes. Thank you, Dave.
Can I tell you a joke before I go?
Always.
Is it a human centipede reference? Because we've been missing one.
Kind of, sort of.
Okay, good.
All right. Why does E.T. love Reese's Pieces?
Why?
Because on his planet, that's what ass tastes like.
Our favorite guest, Dave Zirin, the man that has reintroduced the Beastie Boys to the Kaufman Show. We thank you so much, sir, and we'll catch you soon.
My privilege. Thank you.
Have a great one.
Oh,
that's right. Because we love him. He's the best.
It was a human centipede reference.
It was. It was kind of, sort of.
Yeah. God. Jeez.
It's the Kaufman Show. What can you do, right?
Oh, my God.
I have this fear, Steph, that you cued this a little wrong and we're going to hit some swear words. So just keep your hand on the delay. Just in case, you know, because you don't know.
What's the difference now? After that E.T. reference.
After E.T., after Mike Ward, after Rob Delaney.
Yeah.
I think you guys can handle little Beasties, right?
Why not?
This is the Ill Communication, which Dave Zirin brings us on a semi-regular basis. We've now had him on the show 3 times. How long ago? What, a month ago would have been his first appearance? A little longer? Totally worth checking out on the kaufmanshow.podbean.com.
Yeah, the guy's great.
It's
I could just sit there and listen to him.
His comments on Jeffrey Loria were fantastic.
Yes, they were. And you know what? It was a serious conversation this week, and obviously the subject matter was a little bit more. But you know what?
He's right on top of that story, man.
And you can also count on him to end it in a, you know, lighten it up a little bit.
He knows how to lighten it up.
Pick on E.T. a little
bit. But that being said, Dave Zirin is really at the forefront of this Penn State story. And he does it in a way that I mean, you know where he stands on it. There's no questioning where he stands on it.
Yeah. He shows three-dimensional thinking in all of his articles and all the subject matter in which he...
So happy that he's managed to become a guest on our show, even though we totally butchered his name the first 2 times he was on.
We did, and he was nice enough not to say anything about it.
Yeah, it shows he's a mensch.
He was nicer to us than to E.T.
We'd also like to thank Travis Reitzma, one of our baseball correspondents, who actually put me in touch with Dave Zirin, got me reading his stuff. Check out his Dave's got a wonderful documentary also called Edge of Sports. It's an honor to be able to speak with people like that every single week on this show. It's pretty awesome.
And thank you to everybody on Twitter wishing us a happy first year anniversary. I'm getting quite a few.
Oh yeah, we'll get to them.
We'll
later,
get to them.
That's
yeah.
for sure. We'll thank them.
It's just really
personally.
Kind.
I've been
puts
so,
a tear in me eye.
Jay, I've been so overwhelmed all week by the reactions on Twitter from everybody.
Yeah.
It's blown me away.
And you've been posting some great old interviews that we've done over the year. And
thank you. Thank you. I'm happy.
Brings back some memories.
It's been a great honor. It's been a wonderful year, and we'll talk about it over the next 40 minutes.
Yeah. But, well, we're halfway through the show now, so.
you're listening to The Kaufman Show, TSN 990, part of the Bell Media family. Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. We're working on something real special for you guys.
Oh, I hope it happens. I hope it happens.
And if it doesn't, we'll just pretend that whatever we do is the special thing. And yeah. I'll be none the wiser. Let's go to the phones. 514-790-0990. We, as always, appreciate all the calls, emails, texts, and tweets. Thank you all. Let's go to George in St. Lazare, out in God's country. Hey, Georgie.
Hey, Dave. Hey, Jay. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Not too bad.
Going to be a little nicer to me now.
Yeah. You deserve it, Kaufman.
That's what I love about Twitter.
Yeah, the anonymity. Ruined as soon as you call in is George from St. Lazare.
Dave.
Yes, sir.
On behalf of the whole family, we'd like to say Happy anniversary, Dave!
Oh, that's just the cutest damn thing I've ever heard. Wow. You guys are going to make me cry. Thank you, George. Thank you all.
I just wanted everybody to know that I only discovered your show through Twitter, and I became a fan instantaneously. I have an allegiance to the show. I've even gone as far as writing a letter to the station manager, Wayne Booz, I think his name is.
I believe it's pronounced Buse.
Buse, yes.
And in support of your show.
I was saying Buse, just to be clear.
Just wanted to let you know that the fight is just about to begin. The Dave Kaufman Show is going to go on for a lot longer than a year, I'll tell you that much.
George, thank you so much. And that's it. That's all
okay.
George has to say.
All right. He made his point.
I was going to give him a chance to change the subject. But,
yes.
You know.
That's all he had to say.
George, I appreciate it. And frankly, I don't know how to respond. That's one of the great things about all this. I'm so overwhelmed by everybody and all of their comments. I don't know how to respond. And frankly, this is the only way I know how to respond.
Just that fun. You get what you need. Oh, baby, yeah. Oh. I went down to the Chelsea drugstore to get your prescription filled. I was standing in line with Mr. Jimmy. A man, did he look pretty ill? We decided that we would have a sort of my favorite flavor, cherry red. I sung my song to Mr. Jimmy. Yeah, and he said one word to me, and that was dead. I said to him, you can't always get what you want.
For those of you keeping score at home, this is my favorite song of all time. And because it's my one-year anniversary, I'm going to play it for the first time. So turn that up, Steph.
You can't always get what you want. Yeah.
thank you to Mick and Keith and Brian and Charlie and Bill. This is the Kaufman Show, and we'll be back. It's just my fine. It's just my fine. Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Last in the ages, an exhibition of the big picture through narrative phrases. You see him traveling through Sun Tzu's battling stages. To feed this animal inside to keep the rattling cages. Time to grapple for freedom, fight bureaucratic enslavement. But when I do it, I'ma shed all democratic behavior. I recall that they created this with plastic and paper. Yeah, I haven't heard good music since I last had a pager. Yeah, I guess I'm never sure what we're exactly afraid of. Black, ethnic, and Asian, are these the natural invaders? These embarrassing, shameless, and masquerading Malaysians. You bet I'm blasting the stand. A full class for maintaining. I'm exacting this patience to laugh the blackest of faces. It's like a culture is one big rap circus act amazing. Attacking through stages, trying to recapture the days and sustain the windblown flag, the veritas of status. Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. That is Anakin Slade and Inspector Deck from the Wu-Tang Clan.
He bombs atomically.
Socrates' philosophies.
And hypotheses.
Oh, man. What a rush it must have been for Anakin Slade to share a stage over the last few days with one of his mentors, one of his idols. You know, I remember Anakin telling us one time, the 15-year-old, high-fiving his 15-year-old self that he recorded the song with Inspector Deck. So we're going to bring him on now. Great friend of the show, wonderful supporter of TSN, wonderful supporter of the Montreal Expos. And frankly, we're all big fans. He's kind of family to this show, isn't he, Jay?
He is.
In fact, he's
almost
actually family.
Almost blood related.
Almost.
Yeah.
Well, for me, almost. For you, actually.
He actually is. He's my little brother.
I met Anakin Slade and Jay Farrar the same day. We all met on a bus to Cooperstown, New York. And we'll never forget it because it was the day that Andre Dawson was elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame. Andre Dawson will forever be a Hall of Famer, and Jay and Anakin will forever be my friends. Anakin, welcome to the program, my friend.
Hey, man.
How are you?
It's weird. TSN does feel like my family, and especially this show for some strange reason.
Yeah, it's odd how that works, eh?
It's weird.
Nothing to do with your brother being on it, I'm sure.
No. Oh, yeah, that's right. He is on it.
Hey, bro. I'm on it.
I love you, bro. What's up?
What's up, bro?
We want to talk to you about a couple of things. You've had really an incredible week, and I think... First, we have a little surprise for you, but first I'd like to hear about this. I mean, you played the Belmont, you played in Ottawa, Quebec City as well, right?
Yeah, we just did a little mini east side of Canada tour. We did to Ottawa, and then we came here, and then we went to Niagara Falls, and then we went to Quebec last night. So a lot of traveling, but shows are good, crowds are hype, and, you know, like Deck... It's funny because I asked, obviously the song wasn't in his set. So I was like, listen, the song we did together, I said, you know, could we, you know, maybe do it for the Montreal show? Because I think that would be cool. He was like, yeah, totally, man, totally. Next night, you know, well, we rocked in Montreal. It was great. I was like, wow, that's, you know, I'm happy. I can go home now. I can die now. It was good. And then next night he was like, turned to me during the show. He's like, you ready to do the track? I was like, oh, okay, we're doing it again. In Niagara Falls. So, and then we did it three nights in a row in all the different locations. So it's been amazing. It turned from just doing it one night, you know, special, and now it's like part of the set. So it's great. So I'm basically got my track in Deck set, which is really awesome.
What a rush.
Yeah, crazy.
You, you know, I alluded to it before we brought you on, but the 15-year-old you must have been really pumped.
Yeah, now it's like it's getting absurd because he was just in my kitchen. Like, you know, I had him over for, you know, just to hang out. So now it's like, it's beyond high-fiving. It's kind of like, wow, this is actually, now he's in my home.
And how
it's
do
almost,
you not,
it's
you
almost
know,
weird.
You're staring at him. He's in your kitchen. He's, you know, helping himself to your tap water. And
yeah, exactly.
How do you not just blurt out, I smoke on the line like smoking Joe Frazier, you know?
Yeah, it's really weird. You know, you try to separate yourself from that. And like one thing I've noticed with working with people that, you know, I idolized as a child. This goes from like hanging out with Pedro Martinez you know, doing work with you know, just with Crow and the whole 81 thing. And you kind of have to make sure that, you know, you have to enjoy the moment, but you can't come off as like a fan. You got to kind of put the little fan inside of you to the side for a second you know, and you're hospitable and you work hard at what you're doing. And then you get your little fillers once in a while where you can feel like a fan and, you know, just talking about things. I ask him questions, you know, but I don't bombard him with stuff like that, you know, but it's amazing. And, you know, I want to tell you this because you started with Triumph. Somebody walked up to him last night and handed him a shirt that said, "Lyrically perform armed robberies." That was the T-shirt, and he loved it. He was like, "Wow, this is a fly shirt." So he's gonna wear it, I think, at the next show. I thought that was pretty cool.
Anakin Slade is living the dream right now, and you know, as you know, your brother is your biggest fan, and you were in Quebec City a couple of weeks ago for a Quebec Capitals game, mm-hmm. and they asked you to sing the national anthem.
They did. It was really, you know, I went down there because they were honoring Kid. And they wanted me to, at first they wanted me to perform, and I just didn't think it would go off very well because there would be no monitors on the field. So I decided to decline that, but they showed the video. Crow was there too. It was a great crowd. Crow got a standing ovation, and, you know, it was very emotional. And then they were like saying, "Well, you know, while you're here, why don't you drop the national anthem?" And I was like, okay. I'm like, you realize I'm a rapper, right? And, like, I can hold an occasional note, but I can't do it anthem styles, you know. So I decided to say yes because it's kind of one of those things like, well, you know, how many chances are you going to get to experience doing the national anthem live? So I did it, and it worked. It worked out pretty well. I missed a couple of notes, but I hit some other ones pretty well. I surprised myself at certain points.
I was impressed by it, and I don't know if you know this, but I heard it, and Jay heard it. Jay had some spies down there, and they recorded it, and we're going to play a couple of seconds of it. Right now, this is Anakin Slade doing the national anthem in Quebec City a couple of weeks ago. Enough. I can't do it. I can't do it. Enough. Jay, was that enjoyable for you?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
Bro, you sounded great.
Yeah. I think I would have preferred if you used the Carl Lewis clip.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, but that was from an NBA game. You know, we had to go for authenticity. Yeah. Roseanne Barr in San Diego.
And it's funnier because it's a girl.
That was good. I did grab my crotch, too, though. I didn't. That part you won't see in the video, but I did grab my crotch at one point. Yeah.
In what context in the Canadian National Anthem did you grab your crotch?
No, but that's what Roseanne Barr did.
I know, and I can't believe that you would degenerate to such atrocities.
No, I did the American one.
Oh,
okay
then.
I did them both.
Yeah, he did them both.
I did the American and the Canadian bilingual.
Which one did you find easier to sing?
Easier, I found the Canadian.
Yeah, they always talk about how hard the American national anthem is. There's just such a different range of notes.
For the land of the free, which Carl Lewis could not do.
No.
That's where everybody started laughing.
That's right.
I'm probably going to get hated for this, but
I doubt
it. American anthem is way better on a melodic level, on a melody level. It's awesome.
The American anthem.
Track. Yeah, the American anthem.
Yeah, it's because it's from a British drinking song.
Well, whatever it is, it's excellent. Well, I love singing it.
You know, it's the kind of thing that you can picture your glass going from the left to the right, from the left to the right. And it's got that real, hardcore, rollicking sea shanty feel to it.
It changes pitch levels sometimes. You know, it goes from different. You see, this is how musically inclined I am. It goes from different notes all the time. Like it's all over the place. And I love it though. It's a great song to sing. But hopefully, I can do it better next time.
Yeah, especially vis-a-vis the Roseanne Barr version that everybody has in their heads. You're going to blow them away next time.
I'll try not to be so pitchy next time.
That was my idea, bro. I felt like dissing you.
Thanks, bro.
Okay.
I love you for that.
As long as you know it wasn't for me, then we're all good.
Yeah.
Did you just say he was my biggest fan? Because that didn't sound like a fan moment.
Well, I got to tone it down a little bit. I don't want people to know.
Anakin, I'll tell you why he's your biggest fan. Whenever we play your music in studio, you should see his face light up.
Well.
It's,
wait a minute. Hold on. Was that my surprise? Because that's I'm disappointed in that surprise.
That's all we got for you, bro.
I was actually getting a little excited. I'm like, oh, what is this surprise? I thought, like, I don't know, you had a special guest on who was going to tell me how amazing it was. I don't know. Like, what?
No,
that was it. Hawk on the other line?
Like, that was it. No, no. We'll save that one for when you're in studio.
Right. Okay, good.
Method Man's in your kitchen right now. That's the surprise.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised at this point. It's such an absurd life I have right now.
Anakin Slade, from singing the national anthem in Quebec City to hanging out with Inspector Deck in his kitchen. This man's legit. Well, Anakin, thank you. Wish us a happy anniversary, would you?
Oh, happy anniversary. 1 year. This is like, this is the show, man. This is the Sleeping Beauty. I love it. I think after a while, people are really going to start to appreciate what you guys are doing, and it's only the way up. I'm not just saying that because you're family.
Thank you for all you've done to help us get to that next level, Anakin. We appreciate it.
Love you guys.
Thanks,
you
bro.
We'll speak to you soon.
Have a good one.
Anakin Slade. Follow him on Twitter. AnakinSlayd. He hangs out with the Wu-Tang Clan, okay? Like, how much more legit does it get?
You want to hear more of him? Once More We Survive is his album right now, and he's working on another one, apparently.
And, you know, you can still buy the Gary Carter song.
Yes,
Kid,
you can.
On iTunes. All money goes to the Gary Carter Foundation in Florida for children with autism. And, boy, we should almost get him back on the phone to thank him for all he did for Gary Carter and all he did for our tribute shows for him. But he knows how we feel.
Yeah.
This is The Kaufman Show. We've got one more segment. 4 hours have flown by as we knew they would. So we're sticking around for another two, right, Steph Hamel?
Yes, I'm very excited for that.
The guy wants to kill me. You should see the look on his face. This is The Kaufman Show. We'll be back. Welcome back to the show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, Steph Hamel on the board. Say hello to Jimmy G in Greece, who's listening online right now in the middle of the night. Hopefully working on his tan during the day. Come back a little less like a raccoon next time. But we've got you for one more week, right, Hamel?
Oh, yeah, I haven't gotten the shifts yet, but it's looking like that.
Well, let's just assume.
I hope so.
I know that Jimmy's in Greece, so if you can do me a solid and show up next week at 6, I'd really appreciate it.
I'll do it.
Good stuff. Mr. F?
Mr. K.
What's going on, man?
I don't know. What happened?
Nothing.
Okay.
Nothing. No, that wasn't accusatory. Don't worry.
Okay, I thought I did something wrong. Huh?
Absolutely.
What's going on, man? It was a little aggressive.
That's okay. It was meant as a hey, what's up?
Oh, okay, good.
Everything good?
Yeah, I'm good, man. This is a very enjoyable show to do.
This has been a lot of fun today.
Yeah. Four hours, man.
Yeah, it flew by.
Yeah. Even Steph's nodding his head. He's like, yeah, I had a good time tonight, man.
It absolutely flew by. Once again, a lot of credit to our wonderful guests, Bruce Arthur, Patrick Burke, Mike Ward, Rob Delaney, Cabby Richards, Ben Christensen, Dave Zirin, Anakin Slade. My God. How did we do that? We have no more favors to call in, Jay. We're going to have nobody next week. I'm telling you. We're going to air a Best of the Kaufman Show next week.
You know what, Dave? The way you do things, I'm not worried for a second. And that's the way you've been doing it for the last year. So I'm not worried. I've never been worried.
It's really
about the quality of
really
the show.
It's really turned the corner, Jay, since January.
Yeah.
At that point, it's as if we realized the opportunity that we have. And so much of it comes down to Gary Carter. You know, we've alluded to it the last segment, but dealing with Gary Carter's illness and then his death and then the fallout from his death has shown me how vital of a medium this is and the connection that you can make with your audience. I have made so many friends because we all share these common bonds and we all go through them together. And it's so bloody important. And it's been the greatest honor in the last year to be able to be on radio with you guys.
Yeah.
It's been just, I It's been the time of my life. I'm having more fun professionally than I ever have in my life. I know that this is what I want to do. And tonight, we are a year into it, and hopefully many, many more. Mr. F, I think we make a great team. I really enjoy doing this show every week with
We're
you.
Not too shabby, my friend.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but I enjoy the time we spend together. And my God, I don't even know where to start with all of our callers and tweeters and emails, but just know that even if I don't necessarily write back to all of you, I read everything
we
I get.
We see them. We see all of them.
And I, you know, especially after Gary Carter passed away, it was difficult to go through all of my emails. But it was also kind of cathartic. And I appreciate what you guys offer so much. It makes me want to do a better show and push more boundaries and, you know, talk about things that I think are important. And I always joke about the third line center for the Montreal Canadiens. And frankly, I couldn't care less, especially in the heat of July. I get that that matters to a lot of you. And I respect that. And you have a lot of places to entertain yourself with that. But I think that we try to do something a little bit different here. And, man, I'm having fun, and I really hope you guys are too. I hope you're having fun, Jay.
I have fun every single week. I enjoy it. And thanks for giving me the platform, and thanks for poking the bear once in a while.
It's a pleasure to
You're good at it.
Thank you. Thank you. And I think the mark of being good at it is that you've never swung at me.
I would never swing at you. Well, no, I would never swing at you. Never. Never.
No, of course not. You want to be back next Monday, right?
Well, you might not remember.
It's been a really fun show tonight. It's and again, you know, this weird kind of thing that we do where we go all over the place. I mean, we talked about freedom of speech with comedians. We talked about the dangers of free speech with Patrick Burke. We went all over the place tonight.
Well, that was the plan.
We talked about Penn State. We talked about
bull riding. What was that?
Bull riding with Cabbie. Where the hell did that come from? Things I've never thought. I mean,
yeah.
since Hemingway, I haven't thought of bullfighting. Or not bullfighting, but you know what I mean. Bull running. It's all
when,
bull.
When you first asked me to come on, and you know, we'll try it out and we'll see what have fun. You asked me. You always ask me what I want, what I would like to do. And you still do that to this day because you take my opinion seriously and I really appreciate it.
It matters.
And I said, well, let's talk about things that matter. Let's talk about the big issues. Let's talk about some social, political issues.
Brian Wilde said that to me. He said, and Brian is somebody that Jay and I admire greatly. Brian is a staple of Montreal sports media, and we appreciate everything he's done for us. But Brian said, do important things. That's your niche. Don't talk about BS. Talk about what matters. And we've tried to do that. And it's been a hell of a lot of fun. So we're going to keep at it for as long as they'll let us. Jay, we'll be back next week, right?
I hope so.
Okay, good. So I'll remind everybody about that at the end of this song. I love this town.
I saw you bend in the early days. We all understand why you moved away. We'll hold a grudge anyway. I shot the shit with miniature Tim. If he needs a tune, then I'll write one for him. We like the same books and we like the same sounds. There's a reason that I love this town. I played a show in Kelowna last year. Said, pick it up, Joel. We're dying in here. Picture one hand clapping, then picture half that sound. There's a reason that I hate that town. You saw my band in the early days, then you understand why we moved away. You hold a
Davy and me, face down in our suit, some French restaurant. I saw Riviere de Loup last night at a tour. We burnt the place to the ground. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town.
You've been listening to The Kaufman Show, where if you can play, you can play. For Jay Farrar, I'm Dave Kaufman, and we'll see you next week from 6 to 10, another primetime show.
What'd that sound like?